Always, always. Gina, it's all for you.
Up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Geniuses, philosopher, kings and queens, lovers of freedom, fairness and democracy, truth, justice, the American way. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here on this Friday evening. I got to tell you, earlier this evening I went to a Democratic Party fundraising house party. And what the mainstream media is telling us about Democrats could not be further from the truth. There were about 50 people who showed up to this house party to raise money for local candidates, and they were fit to be tied. They were ready to go. They were ready to get out and start fighting. And this frame jig that the Democrats are demoralized and everybody's all got their heads in their hands and they're wringing their hands because, oh, what are we going to do? Hogwash. I'm telling you, as this election season heats up, and we're just at the beginning, as this heats up, we are going to see energized, enthusiastic Democrats, because we don't want to go back. We don't want to do the 180. We don't want to pull the UE in the middle of the highway. We don't want to go back to the shrub policies. We don't want to go back to the George W. Bush years. We've been there. We've done that, and it's failed. Conservatism as a whole has failed. First it was, oh, we've got fiscal conservatives, then Reagan conservatives, and Christian conservatives, and compassionate conservatives, and common sense conservatives, and of course creepy and crazy to round out the seven dopes. All of them failures. I mean, the conservative movement, again, has had more facelifts than Joan Rivers. It's a failure, folks. And when these Tea Party twits stand up and go, oh, I want smaller government, less spending, ask him, where do you think this economy would be had our government not created demand and kept people on the job, people probably like you? What would have happened to our economy? Well, you know what would have happened? Exactly what the conservatives want. Exactly what the Pat Toomeys of the world want. A harder down. You know what that means? That means you lose. You lose everything. They would have been happy, Jake, with twice as many foreclosures. They'd have been happy with wages that fall through the floor to where we'll work for food isn't a low enough wage. We've seen their game plan. We've been down this road. Why do we want to go back? Well, I'll tell you why. Because the big money want to take us back. The big money is saying, hey, we can't have this financial reform. We can't have people with health care security. We want workers on the edge of their seat. We want them scared and demoralized. We want them desperate. So they'll take the crappy jobs with low pay and no benefits and no pension. They'll take the crappy jobs that we keep cutting their pay, like they're trying to do to the MOTS workers.
Yes.
Also, they can say, well, at least we have a job. Oh, you know, at least we have a job. Like I said, you know, where do we go? I can give a job everybody, buck an hour. Work all you want.
They talk about, they're good about the other side of conservatives, the corporate interests are good about, well, we need to restore fiscal responsibility. We need to restore saneness. What they really want is what they're really saying when you look at their programs and you pull that veil, that false veil away. They want all the power, and they want to diminish labor unions, and they know labor unions are the last vestige of power preventing them from really taking over this country. They want you to go back to the good old days. And we mentioned Mott Foods. Oh, my God, you would have thought that the truck driver that they used, you know,
forklift driver,
and he was probably one of the highest paid in their plant. $20, can you imagine that? And just a horrible scoundrel rate. How dare he work for $20 an hour? He should be making what the non-union people with no benefits are making, a little bit over $9 an hour. That's their attitude.
But what's amazing is you've got working people in this country who looked at that guy making $20 an hour going, well, you're just a forklift driver. You don't deserve that. They don't look in the mirror and say, you know what, I'm doing this job and I'm not making $20. How do I get that? That doesn't seem to be in the calculus of most American workers' minds. To me, if someone's making 20 bucks an hour or 30 bucks an hour, hey, good for you, brother. How about bringing the rest of us along? But that calculus seems to be lost. And I'm saying we need to come back together. We need to have that come back to Jesus moment. We need to have the talk of the town. We need to be the ones to say, hey, we're going to stand together. We're not going to slit our brother's throat for a couple of pennies. We're not going to scab someone else's job. We're not going to cross a picket line. It's frustrating, I got to tell you. But this idea that, going back to this house party night, this idea that the Democrats are somehow demoralized, utter and pure horse pucking. These folks were charged up, ready to go, ready to tell the good word, which is we don't want to go back to pay or die health care. We don't want to go back to speculation where the gamblers win and get to keep all the profits, and if they lose, we got to pay for it. We don't want to go back to that.
Well, historically, Labor Day is the kickoff of the campaign.
Yes.
And that's when people, to some degree, who don't particularly pay attention to the polls, who aren't really politically involved, they'll vote. But their attention span is usually, maybe the last month, maybe the last 6 weeks. But I can tell you this, that those who are involved in the party and those who are involved in the labor movement are fired up because they understand what is at stake. And what we have to do is get that message out. And there's definitely enough time to turn this around. But we gotta work, and we got to work hard. And make no mistake, this is not just critical for the agenda of the Obama administration and the Democrats on labor the next 2 years. What happens in this election is going to have a profound effect on whether President Obama is a one-term or a two-term president. You can bet on that.
304-574-7812 is our number. What do you think? Do you think the Democrats are demoralized? Tonight really energized me because I saw people coming together. I saw people saying, you know what, we're not going to stand for this. We're going to throw a couple bucks in the pot to help these candidates, because really that's what it comes down to. It comes down to how do we help these candidates get their message out? Because I look at somebody like Pat Toomey, Derivative Pat, the guy who really helped the architect of this disaster, and he's leading in the polls. The guy who brought us Graham Leach Bliley, the guy who helped pitch out Glass-Steagall, turning banks into casino houses. This guy was instrumental in that. And yet most people in this state don't know that. And that's why I'm saying we need to get out and we need to be telling people, look, this guy's policies brought this on. Do we want to go back to that? You know what? This is what amazes me. The Republicans, their big idea, how we're going to turn the economy around? Deregulation and tax cuts. Excuse me? How the hell did we get into this mess? Oh, yeah, deregulation and tax cuts. That's how we got into this mess.
Those were the people with the shovels, right?
If tax cuts were the panacea, the Bush years should have been the best economic years in the history of civilization because we squandered a $5 trillion surplus and turned that into a $5 trillion deficit. And now we've got tea people going, well, I'm worried about deficit. A little late after $10 trillion by the last guy? I really would love a defense of that. Someone please defend that position that, well, you know, when Bush was squandering away $10 trillion, that was okay. But now that President Obama's trying to dig out of the worst economic crisis in my lifetime, well, hold the phone. Doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I think people need to wake up and realize this economy and the global economy could have collapsed. And by his action, granted, I say it was still too small, but it's what the Republicans would have given. And you've got to remember that. And while I do beat him up for not pushing bigger and bolder ideas, you've got to understand the political realities. Politics are the art of the possible. And it just wasn't possible.
And isn't it ironic, and a lot of our listeners probably don't even reside in Pennsylvania, but we've been assaulted for 6 weeks by this pro-corporate campaign of the Toomey.
The Toomey.
The sea, the absolute humongous sea of corporate money just coming into this state. And he's trying to put the moniker of extremist on Joe Sustak, a mainstream Democrat. And here you have Pat Toomey, who worships at the altar of political greed. He wants to privatize your Social Security.
Oh, but he's a
privatize Medicare.
He's a small business.
Who eliminated that absolute wall that we needed between banks and financial investment houses. He is the one. And by the way, worked for the very masters that he now gets direction from. Worked in Wall Street for several years. And this man wants to call Joe Sustak a radical. He's basically calling him this left-wing loony.
Well, you got to project. I mean, you know, he's
a man who's a national political advisor.
Look, there's nothing in this guy that Pennsylvania voters agrees with. So what you have to do is you have to tear down the other guy. If there's no reason for you to vote for Rick Smith, then I've got to tell them that, well, Jake Long's a scumbag. We don't want him around. Oh, he's horrible. You know, the bald head causes global warming. And people will believe it if you say it often enough. What I like about Sestak is he's come out and said, this is what I've done. Judge me on what I've done. Judge me on my character. This guy's an admiral. And you're saying, well, liberal admiral. He's a liberal admiral.
Here's the telltale. And I do believe it's true. I've heard it said several times, and after thought about it, I think it is true. If you have to try to take a state or a local election national, you usually don't have anything to sell. They're trying to tie Joe Sestak to Pelosi. What does that mean? Well, what's Toomey going to say? What's the positive about Toomey that he can project to the people of Pennsylvania? He has to go negative.
He has to tie
Joe Sustak to the people who nationally don't necessarily like.
Hold on. You know, his position is privatizing Social Security. You can't run a campaign on, I'm Pat Toomey, and I've paid for this message. I want to privatize your Social Security. We're going to give you these wonderful 401k-like accounts. We're going to give you your own individual accounts. And you can manage them just like you did to your 401k. Oh, wait, you're 200.5. And they're going to fee you to death, and they're going to manage your money. And by the time you go to get it, it's not going to be there, and all the onus is going to be on you. So you're going to be the one suffering the roller coaster that is Wall Street. And when we created Social Security, Jake, we said, you know what? This is an anti-poverty program. we're going to make sure that nobody falls below this line, that seniors don't have to die in the gutter, they don't need to have to eat cat food, that there's going to be some dignity in retirement, some security. And they hate that. Conservatives hate the fact that you've got some security. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about this. And this guy who's running, he ran for Republican treasurer in Stark County, Ohio. You're going to love these clips. We're right back after this. 304-574-7812. We're right back after this. Stick around.
You know, I told you once tonight that you could always speak your mind. You worked so hard to say what's right. I watched you do it all the time.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
If you look at the whole flock of 535 Congress critters, it's hard not to giggle or break out in uncontrollable sobs at the thought that, oh my God, this is the United States Congress. As Peggy Lee sang years ago, is that all there is? Well, no. Within the manure pile, there are quite a few genuine gems, and one of the finest is a fellow who consistently stands for common sense and the common good. He's Russ Feingold, U.S. Senator from Wisconsin. Russ is a Democrat, but really he's a populist maverick who has refused to go along to get along, even when that means going against his own party and against what the political consultants tell him is his own best interests. For example, he was the lone Senate vote against the autocratic liberty-busting Patriot Act in 2001. Feingold also has had the stuff to vote against Obama's escalation of the misguided war in Afghanistan. And not only did he oppose the 2008 bailout of Wall Street banksters, but he also said no this year to Obama's Wall Street regulatory reforms, blasting them as too weak and meek. So this sensible senator is now targeted for defeat by the moneyed elites. They found a multimillionaire corporate Republican who made a fortune in plastic to use confused Tea Party forces as a ramrod to oust Russ. The corporate contender attacks Social Security as a giant Ponzi scheme, calls health care reform the greatest assault on our freedom in my lifetime, and insists that the science of global climate change is unproven. If this guy gets any dumber, we'd have to water him twice a day. This is Jim Hightower saying, but he's a rich corporate honcho, backed by the moneyed power, so he could join the congressional manure pile, if we the people don't rally around one of our own. Connect with Russ Feingold at www.russfeingold.org. Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publishers of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current. Even a dead fish can go with the flow. Now available wherever books are sold.
Sanity for a change. The Rick Smith Show.
Davidson, the robot is long gone. Yeah, yeah. The guy who was the CIA hitman, is that who you're talking about? Chuck Barrett.
Chuck Barrett. Yeah.
Anyway, Phil Davidson, he was running for, but lost, the Republican nomination for treasurer of Stark County, Ohio. And what I found interesting, and this YouTube video has pretty much gone viral, because you've got this guy who, I think he said he has a master's degree in communication, but this speech is hysterical, because he says like five words, and then he steps back and gives himself a real proud look, and he goes on to the next, as he's about ready to cry. I got to play some of these, because I don't think he got the memo. That some of this stuff you're really not supposed to say like this.
Government may be about service, politics is about winning.
Government may be about services, but politics is about winning. Think about that for a second. If you're going to have someone tell you that to your face, that it's just about politics. They, you know, government may be about services, but politics is about winning. You kind of understand what he's, where his mindset is, Jake. It's not about the greater good. It's not about public service. You know, it's not about any of those altruistic things. It's about winning. We're going to win. I don't care what. I don't know what I'm going to do when we win, but I'm going to win anyway.
I read some books, and I know you have too, about how vicious over our history we like to think that America is above it. You know, even from the Revolutionary War on, politics was, I mean, if you read some of the campaigns, some of the accusations, I mean, my God, they were just absolutely brutal and vicious. But in my lifetime, I got to tell you, I have never seen politics at the level it is now. This Republican Party is literally willing to make the people, millions of Americans, suffer so that they can, quote, win, unquote. It is about winning. It is about the status quo. It is about their power and their corporate masters. And they will do and say anything to maintain that power. They are ruthless. We wonder why. Yes, the Democrats, some of them were weak-kneed. You're exactly right. But the Republicans were more hardcore, and they played the game better. Now, is that for the betterment of the country? Absolutely not. There is no opposition that's going to look out for the welfare of this nation. Loyal, I think the phrase is loyal opposition. Where is it? It's nowhere to be seen, and shame on them. But most of them, and the ones who are willing to step up, Rick, they are told, if you step out of line, we will cut you off at the knees. They are willing to play hardball more so than the Democrats, and well, shame on them.
They told you from the beginning what they were going to do. Right from the start, you knew that their plan was obstruction. It was block, delay, hold up. It was to be the party of no, because they knew that if they did that, this president would fail. And, you know, they said it. We want him to fail. I hope he fails. I don't know how much closer to the truth Limbaugh has ever been. And, you know, the reality is they've won. We didn't call them out enough. We didn't take them into public square and make them accountable. And this, you know, you look at this, before we play the rest of the clips, you look at this thing with this Koran, with this crazy pastor whose daughter now has said he's gone off the Lulu end. His own daughters. He's crazy. We've been talking about that for 2 weeks now. And you know what that is? It's a distraction. Because it took our eye off the real problems that this country faces. The fact that we've got a massive trade deficit. The fact that we're borrowing money from a country that is stealing our jobs. The fact that people don't have the health care that they need. All of these things that government is having a difficult time with right now, what we're talking about is some kook who wants to burn a book. It's the shiny thing. Over here, silly, right there. There's the shiny thing. Don't worry about the real problems that face the country. No. Worry about the stupid stuff. And that's what the Republicans have been masters at. And, you know, I listened to Bob Casey talk tonight at Jill's house party. And he's, again, talking about facts and figures and this is what we did to save the economy. That stuff doesn't fly. You got to get out there and tell a story. Hey, this is Jake Long. Without the stimulus package, Jake Long loses his job. Jake Long loses his house. His kids go on welfare. He loses everything he's worked for. That's what we need to be talking about. We need to be telling the stories of success. Oh, you know those building projects out here, the ones that are rebuilding our roads and rebuilding the bridges? These are the workers. These are the workers who do that job. And you know what? Where do they spend the money? In the local community. How many jobs has that created? How many jobs has that saved? That's what we need to be talking about. Not just dry facts and figures. And we need to be talking about emotions. We got to get emotional. Because that's all the teabaggers have. But when we get emotional, then we bring out our facts and make sure that they're right. You know, I know a teabag guy who, you know, every time I talk to him, his numbers change because he pulls them out of the place most Republicans pull their facts right out of their behinds.
I think you hit on something key, and I heard this expressed by some people who I admire, and they're exactly right. When the teabaggers start their BS and they talk about less government, ask them your policies. How many jobs are we going to create? When we have to get back to the Constitution, ask them, how many jobs does that create? When we have to get back to, oh, dare I say it, honor. If we get back to honor, according to these crazy right-wingers, how many jobs does that bring us?
I've never seen a tax cut that's created a job. I've never seen a tax cut that has paved a road. Haven't seen it. Built a school. Built a hospital. Doesn't happen. Let's get back to these clips, because this one's funny. Politics is not touch football, he says.
Politics is not touch football. Politics is winner take all. It always has been, and it always will be.
It always will be. He's so fired up, he's about to cry. Love my country. I've been watching Glenn Beck all week. I love football. I love it. I love it. Buy pajamagrams. Yeah, it's about winning. It's about this guy's an absolute kook, but I love it. I love it. Here's what else he had to say.
I believe in the entities and the principles of the National Republican Party, the State of Ohio Republican Party, and the Stark County Republican Party.
Yes, I do. Come on, Jake. You didn't stand up for it. Come on. You didn't stand up. He pledged allegiance. Play it again.
I believe in the entities and the principles of the National Republican Party, the State of Ohio Republican Party, and the Stark County Republican Party.
And the land for which it stands. Tax cuts for the rich. Pay or die health care for the rest of you. What a kook. But you know, here's the thing. And what's interesting to me is I came across a story from my home state of Ohio, like this kook is from. And this is the problem. Tell you right now, this is the problem. And this, really, T-Twizzlers, this is what you need to be angry about. A monument. A monument was built in Toledo, Ohio. I don't know if you've ever been to Toledo, Ohio, Jake, but Toledo, Ohio was known for what?
Tires of America.
Glass. Akron was tires.
Okay.
Toledo, Ohio was the glass capital of the world. When I was a kid, if you had something with glass in it, it was probably made in Toledo, Ohio. So they have erected this $30 million glass pavilion made of 360 glass panels weighing over 1,300 pounds each. That had to create some jobs. What do you think? They made, 360 of these panels at 1,300 pounds a piece? That's a lot of glass. That's good for the economy, right? In the glass capital of the world, Toledo, Ohio, 360 glass panels, 1,300 pounds a piece, made in China. I can't make this up. Made in China, in the glass capital of the world. And we wonder why we're struggling. We wonder why our standard of living is falling. You know, when you thought of Pittsburgh, what'd you think of? You thought of steel. When you thought of Akron, you thought of rubber. Toledo was glass. Gone. And why is that? Because we've got horrible trade policies. Absolutely horrible trade policies. And we are losing the jobs of the next generation. We're losing those green jobs that were supposed to replace the steel, the glass, the rubber. We were supposed to get jobs building wind turbines and jobs making photovoltaic cells and big solar panels and all of the things that were going to power us in the 21st century. And we're losing that. And if it weren't for the steel workers, If it weren't for the steel workers, nobody would be standing up for American workers, Jake. We talked about yesterday. They filed a 301 claim with the WTO saying, look, the government didn't do it. Our government didn't do it. The feds didn't do it. The state and local governments didn't do it. Hell, the corporations didn't even do it. It had to be the representative of the workers. And we're losing that. Let's take a quick break right here. We're right back with your calls, 304-574-7812. We're right back after this. Stick around.
Most important issues of the day in a way that only Rick can cover them. This is the Rick Smith Show.
Welcome to paradise.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
Enough is enough. This is about jobs, and it's about the economic future of this country, and importantly, the economic future of industrial workers in America.
United Steelworkers President Leo Girard announcing Thursday that the union has filed a massive legal case against alleged illegal Chinese trading practices in clean energy equipment exports. The USW says enough is enough and it's time to defend U.S. workers against illegal Chinese trade policies that have cost thousands of American jobs. Girard says the filing with the Obama administration is under Section 301 of U.S. trade law and alleges several types of illegal practices.
Discriminatory laws and regulations, technology transfer requirements, restrictions on access to critical materials, massive subsidies that have caused serious prejudice to U.S. jobs and U.S. interests. Together, we believe that these practices have given Chinese producers an unfair and illegal upper hand in accessing investment, technology, raw materials, and markets, while foreclosing the same opportunity to our manufacturers and, in particular, our workers.
A Duluth nursing strike has been avoided after nearly 30 straight hours of labor contract negotiations resulted in a tentative agreement. The Minnesota Nurses Association had announced plans for a one-day strike, September 14th, unless an agreement was reached. The tentative agreement must be approved by the nearly 1,000 nurses at Duluth's SMDC Medical Center. Nurses at St. Luke's in Duluth are voting on an agreement that was previously reached there. Companies have reported record earnings and sitting on a lot of cash. But where are the jobs? In the bank. Jesse Russell reports.
Major companies have seen three quarters of increases in earnings, but they aren't turning that money around and creating new jobs for a chronically unemployed populace. Combined, the companies in Standard & Poor's 500 are sitting on a record pile of $837 billion in cash. According to the S&P, that's an increase of 26% over last year. Those companies are also investing less in new facilities and equipment upgrades. Those are down 12% from a year ago. According to USA Today, the $837 billion would pay 2.4 million workers $70,000 a year in salaries for five straight years.
The International Association of Machinists and the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades joined other unions in Washington State in a rally supporting U.S. Senator Patty Murray's campaign. IAM President Tom Buffenbarger says his union's support for Murray comes down to one word, jobs. The IAM says Senator Murray has a solid track record on jobs, especially in preserving and protecting good aerospace jobs. This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Time for change. It's time to rearrange. Time to rearrange. Time to rearrange.
Keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
Start now? Are we going to stand up? Are we going to be angry? Are we going to fight back? Or are we going to sit down and we're going to let the T-Twizzlers scream and shout us down with their misspelled signs and their inaccuracies and their over-misinformed, limited intellect? Are we going to do that? I don't think so. I think as this election season heats up, Jake, I think people are going to say, I've had enough of being yelled at. I've had enough of the guy standing on the corner with no pubic option. I guess maybe that's an abstinence-only commercial. No pubic option. You know, that's the best I can come up with for that. I still haven't figured out with a red circle with the slash through it that says amnesty. I think he meant amnesty, but I don't know. I'm not a mind reader. I'm not clairvoyant. If I were, I would pick the lottery numbers. I wouldn't try and pick a T-Twizzler's name. I wouldn't try and pick their brain because, hey, look, not an awful lot there to be picking from.
Mm.
Slim Pickens.
Yes.
What do you got for us?
Yeah, well, we talked about Mr. Toomey, and that's been the center of our conversation here so far. Some interesting developments. Back in 2009, Chris Matthews, I like to watch him on MSNBC. Good show.
You know what? In talking about Toomey, if I can change this for a second, he loves to say that he's a small businessman. Oh, I'm a small businessman. I ran a small bar, and I used to go to that place often. It was a great place to go see football games. Never once did I see him. And I spent a lot of money in that place. I made him a couple of bucks.
According to everything I read, Rick, what happened was he bought the business and he basically had managers doing all of the managing because of the ability of them. Now, he was behind it with his money, but because of the ability of the people he hired, he was successful.
See, but the story that I get that the media plays out, and I don't mean to cut you off, but the story that I get is that, you know, he was this guy who was there 30 hours a day working his fingers to the bone, and he was back there frying up the chicken wings, and he was had the little skirt on running out to serve them, and, you know, he's shaking his little hiney to get bigger tips. You know, that's the way he makes it sound, or am I missing something here?
No, you're not. No.
So which is it? Was he at the fry-a-later? Was he cooking up the grub? Or was he the guy who just had the money? And the reality is, he's the guy who just had the money. Like most rich people. Look, this guy's not like you and me. I would say he's probably never had dirt under his fingers a day in his life.
I believe you said it was a sports bar, basically.
It was. It was called Rookies.
Well,
it was, and look,
in other words, he didn't reinvent the wheel.
No.
He wasn't this magnanimous entrepreneur who came up with all these.
He threw some money
ideas
in at the right time. He was the only place in the city of Allentown that had the Sunday NFL ticket. So, of course, the place was crowded with all the different people like me, because I'm a Broncos fan, who, you know, the game wasn't on TV. You went down to the sports bar, you got your little table, had the little 9-inch TV right there for you to watch the game on.
There were sports bars in Harrisburg 20 years ago that used to do the same thing whenever there was an event.
That's about when this
especially
was.
Especially Penn State football, which is hugely popular in this area. Or the Steelers now, they do the same thing.
Right. No.
Smart.
But that place, the good thing about that is it had all the games.
Mm-hmm.
So you could go watch whatever you wanted. And I liked the place. It was all right. But he didn't, you know, he wasn't the guy making it the place that it was. He was the guy who put up a couple of bucks to build the building, and give him credit where credit is due. He did invest his money, and, hey, good for him, created some jobs. But he wasn't the guy who was cooking the food. He wasn't the guy serving me. He wasn't any of those people. He was an investor. He's not you.
And they portray him as this entrepreneur who's gone through the wars.
Yes. You know, he was there at
3
o'clock.
And he knows what it is to work hard.
At 4 o'clock in the morning when the fry-a-later went down, he was the guy climbing underneath with the muck all around. Yeah, you bet. Yeah, yeah.
And did you
believe that? I got several bridges.
You probably never once saw him.
Never once.
So anyway, to get to my story, Chris Matthews, love his show on MSNBC. Play it hardball. I watch it whenever I can. I know you don't, a lot of times you don't have time. Anyway, Tom Ridge was on his show back in May of 2009, and they asked him about the Senate race in Pennsylvania. And the question was, can Toomey beat the Democrat? And former Governor Ridge hesitated a little bit, and he said, well, it depends on the Democrat. And then Chris Matthews said, would you vote for him? And he didn't say anything. He said, come on. He said, come on, fess up. Would you vote for him? Tom Ridge said, well, you know, there's something wonderful about America. It's called the secret ballot. so he wouldn't give him his endorsement. He didn't even say he'd vote for him.
I wonder how much time we paid
but
for it.
But times have changed.
I wonder how much time we paid for it.
Times have changed. All of a sudden, Tom Ridge gets this big paying job for the natural gas industry in Pennsylvania, who you can bet is pouring oceans of money into Toomey's campaign. All of a sudden, he's endorsed Mr. Toomey.
My,
the great equalizer.
Are we surprised?
No, we're not. It's called money. All of a sudden, Mr. Toomey is the answer to all the problems in Pennsylvania.
It's amazing how those green little bills pave the way. It's amazing. You know, because if you remember Tom Ridge, basically just your basic shill for the Bush administration.
Yes.
Jerking around the terror alerts. Quit the job. Why? Oh, because I need to spend more time with my family. No, nonsense. He went to get the big-paying gig, and he made big bucks. And I think at some point, and I wish it would have happened already, that they close that swinging door. That they say, you know what, if you worked in government for the next 5 years, you can't talk to anybody on Capitol Hill. Nobody. And you see some of the stuff.
And here's the irony. These conservatives talk about less government and less government involvement. If I remember... Don't you remember the stadium controversy going back when Ridge was governor? He's the one under his administration who got money for the stadiums of the Philadelphia Eagles, Philadelphia Phillies, Pittsburgh Pirates, and Pittsburgh Steelers. And now he's the arch conservative.
But the thing is, I'm not against
that. Times have changed.
I'm not against that. I'm in favor of building stuff. I like building stuff. Build big stuff. Because when you... Like Louis Black does this bit that I think is just terrific. Just build something freaking big so that we can build a freaking big hotel next to it. And then a freaking big restaurant. And then a freaking big amusement park. But build something. Get people employed building it. You know, all the stuff that goes into building stuff. And this is where I got a problem with tax cuts for small businesses. Again, we're giving more tax cuts out. Tax cuts don't build stuff. You know what you do? You say, I want to build something. Jake, would your company like to build my freaking big thing? And Jake says, yes. We would love to build your freaking big thing. That's how you spur an economy. That's how you get people back to work. These little fringes around the edges going, oh, here, this is nice to make this group happy, and this is nice to get this group happy. Build something.
To show you how bad the economy is, the Economic Policy Institute came out with some numbers. Some of them are deeply troubling. It involves unemployment, involves Social Security, involves what's happening to a lot of people's 401ks. Just quickly throw some numbers out. 15 million people. More than 7.7 million since December of 2007 when the economy hit the tank. Unemployed who have been jobless more than 6 months, an astounding 42%. 42%, but yet you have a man who wants to be governor who says the problem in Pennsylvania is that these people who are taking advantage of the system and are getting unemployment, they don't want to go back to
work. They're lazy. They're lazy. They won't take jobs. There are jobs out there. I know where they are.
42% have been jobless for 6 months or more. Why? Because their jobs are gone. It's pretty simple, Tom Corbett.
But here's the thing. You know, you go back to that big number right at the very beginning that you brought up. That big number. When did that start? Because they love to blame Obama for the job losses. He's the guy who stopped the bleeding. See, at some point you gotta stop the bleeding. And we were hemorrhaging 700,000 jobs a month as Obama came into office.
730 at the apex. It's correct.
I don't think people understand how significant that was. And the fact that they acted quickly to get some stimulus money in there, telling us, they told us, that money wouldn't hit the economy till now, really. And still, it's not fully out yet.
And what people have to understand, the effect of the stimulus didn't just happen overnight. In other words, you didn't go from 730,000 to the next month zero. It was a gradual. It was gradual, gradual, gradual. And if it wasn't for that stimulus, not only cutting down the number of jobs lost, but actually increasing a little bit. Now, will we like more? Yes. But Obama's actually created more jobs than Bush did in 8 years. Do we want a lot more? You bet.
Let's hold on to the rest of those numbers. 304-574-7812. 304-574-7812. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Stick around.
I'm a man with a vision. A boy with a gun. I got a picture in my pocket of the lucky one. I'll announce the winner on the radio. With my microphone, I do a super show. I wear a cowboy hat. It is my business hat. I'm up till 1 a.m. I must tell you that. I'm a man with a mission.
The Rick Smith Show. Teaching America for the better.
The steel strike of 1919 was called the Hunky Strike because most of the workers were either first or second generation immigrants from Eastern and Central Europe. Up until the end of World War I, workers had benefited from shorter hours, better pay, and the promise of union recognition. Once the war came to an end, the mill owners pursued anti-union open shop policies and other cost-cutting measures. During the strike, there was near total suppression of all civil liberties. Major work issues included the 12-hour day, the 7-day work week, scores of workers being injured and maimed, union recognition, and poverty wages. Mary Harris, better known as Mother Jones, fought tirelessly throughout her life for social justice and human rights as a labor leader and a worker advocate. On August 20th, while visiting striking miners in Homestead, Pennsylvania, home of U.S. Steel's famous Homestead Steelworks, she defied injunctions against public gatherings and addressed 5,000 striking workers and their families. This speech led to her being arrested and jailed for giving an unauthorized speech. When brought before the judge, she was asked who had signed a permit to speak at a public gathering. She answered, Patrick Henry, Thomas Jefferson, and John Adams. As the strike went on, Mother Jones, the grandmother of all agitators, gave many speeches to rally the workers. One speech in Chicago was described by a spy for the U.S. War Department's Military Intelligence Division as the foulest and most profane that can be imagined, teeming with ultra-radical suggestions. Welcoming the spies, she would invite them to the front of the crowd so they could report her words accurately. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Official supporter of Palin Santorum 2012. The Rick Smith Show.
Hello, America.
Yes. Hello, America.
Let me thank you for your time.
Well, I'll tell you one thing's for certain. Sarah Palin is not going to run for president in 2012. Put your money on that. She is not going to give up the lucrative gig that she's got. And let's say she did win. Imagine this for a second. Imagine how much money she could make if she quit as president. Think about that for a second. Maybe I've been thinking about this the wrong way. Maybe she runs for president, her and Santorum. Santorum, you know, and Ridge and all of them pay her a whole bunch of money. Because, you know, money is all this gold digger really is interested in. So let's say, you know, she gets a boatload of cash, she runs, and then she resigns because she's doing it for the good of America to give us... Wow, boy, I'm getting sick just thinking about this.
Don't worry, Rick. She's not going to run. She'd have to take a huge cut.
Yeah, well, like I said, for the short term, she'd quit, and then there'd be really big book deals about that. Again, 304-574-7812. If you want to email us, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I got an email during the break from Duncan in California. Thanks for the email. I definitely will get to that. That piece you sent me at some point in the next couple of days, probably tomorrow. Thanks so much. If you've got any questions, comments, something on your mind, a story that you want to put my way, rick@therickSmithShow.com. We do look at every email, and I do respond to all of them personally. And look, next Tuesday we're going hot across the airwaves, the terrestrial airwaves here in central Pennsylvania. This has been kind of a rough week. We're working out the technical bugs of new equipment, of new personnel. We're kind of getting everything together, and I think we've got it. So on Tuesday, when we kick into high gear, we'll have the phones up and running with the 800 number for people to call in. I'm really, really hoping you will take that opportunity to make an impression on the people of Central Pennsylvania. To say, look, hey, the mainstream corporate-controlled media may be saying Democrats are down. They may say Labor's angry at the president for not doing what they wanted him to do. But I want you to tell them otherwise. Say, look, we understand this was a huge hole to dig out of. This guy is doing the best he can, and we're going to support him. Because we don't want to go back to the Bush years. We don't want to go back to Reaganomics. We don't want to go back to voodoo Reaganomics. We just don't want to do it. We're going to continue on the same path with steady, slow growth so that we have a sustained growth. That simple. You were talking about Social Security.
Yes. If I can get one other figure on unemployment, and this is startling, Rick, if you take into account those who are unemployed, underemployed, and involuntary part-time, over 26%, that means better than one out of four Americans is not making adequate income. Average compensation level, $306 a week. Wow. A whopping $15,000 a year if you take that over a 12-month period. But yet you have some Republicans that say the problem is, and you hear not just people running for local office, not just people running for state office, but the U.S. Congress. Several candidates running for Congress on the Republican side have said the problem is that too many people are gold-bricking. And a whopping $300 a week, you're barely existing. You might be able to get some, you might be able to pay a couple bills, you might be able to get some food in the pantry, and that's basically it.
You don't get any extra cheese,
and you're literally sinking into an economic morass. And yet you have these nitwits on the right trying to run for office and say, well, when I get in the U.S. Senate, there'll be no more gold bricking. Are you kidding me? I mean, too many Americans are accepting this insanity without speaking out. When you have someone wanting to be in the U.S. Senate who has that attitude, we have to speak out. That is wrong, that is insane, and economically, it's just not viable. And we need to speak out as Americans. Social Security, some very interesting facts. Average Social Security benefit, $14,050, right? Share of retirees receiving all their income from Social Security, 1 out of 4, 25%. Share of retirees receiving more than half of their income from Social Security, about 70%, 7 in 10. And yet you have these nitwit right-wing crackpots who want to cut Social Security benefits. Are you nuts?
Tell me what you really think.
Well, it angers me because this program, above all others, and maybe that's why they attack it, and we've talked about this on our show, but we have some new listeners. You really, and I do believe this, I believe this 100%. The Social Security is the most successful social program in the history of this country, and it could very well be, and I do believe it is, if you really want to take the time and study it. The most successful social program in the history of the world. We have saved hundreds of millions of Americans from going back into poverty, which is exactly what it was designed to do.
And but Jake, whoa. Social Security has been a failure. It's failed. It's been failing for 75 years. Every year, it's been failing. Next year is the end of the world. Isn't that what they're telling us? It's failing. It's going to go away. It's not going to be there when I go to get it. It's not going to be there for me. Of course it's going to be there. That's what they want. They want this division of age. They want this, I'm trying to think of the right word for it, this age war, this generational war between the young and the old. They want that split. You know, when I first started in the union, and I'm sure it was the same way when you started. It was the old-timer who came up, put his arm around me and said, kids, stick with me, and I'll show you the ropes. That's how it was, and that's not that long ago. As far as I know it, that's changed. They're trying to pit the old-timer against the young kid and vice versa. It's not how it should be. I still remember the old guy. He was a good old guy. Called him Pops. Good old guy.
And probably the same thing happened to him when he was gone.
That's it.
It's a generational responsibility.
You know,
but when it comes down to it, it's simple human decency. Doing the right thing at the end of the day. And we've lost that in this country. Simply doing the right thing.
Go ahead. What do you got for us next?
Okay. A disturbing trend in this country because of the economic morass. More and more people are taking money, and I have advised quite a few people not to do this, taking money out of their 401ks. Oh. Why? That's the worst thing you can possibly do.
Well, it's the worst thing you could do, but not now when it's half of what it was before.
That's right.
Why would you want to take money out of the... But again, it comes back to... They need to hold on to what they
mortgage
have.
Or college tuition. Between 2007 and 2009, $1.5 trillion has been taken. That's a lot of money, Rick. $1.5 trillion from retirement that the retirement accounts that those people are going to need just to survive. They've done it now. Somewhere along the line, I'm sure if they would have got better advice, they probably could have come up with something. But some people have no choice. That's the only available cash they have. Out of sheer desperation, they're doing that to save their homes. And what do you do? What do you do if you're a father of four kids? What do? You want to lose your home and be homeless?
But chances are you're going to lose it anyway. I mean, that's part of the really bizarre scenarios. I've known a couple of people who have done that. I got a friend who runs a small business, and they do business checks. They do your credit checks, and he was explaining to me that there are two reasons they do credit checks. One, they want to know who the people who are theft potential. If you have a really bad credit rating, chances are you are going to have the will to steal to pay your bills. He said, but on the other hand, people who have impeccable credit, they're going to steal to keep that impeccable credit. And that's kind of what's going on here. What you're seeing are people who they've never had to deal with economic turmoil before. They've always had jobs that paid the bills. They've always been able to make ends meet. But now with the way the economy's gone straight down, thanks to our friends on the extreme right and a lot of conservative Democrats with these bizarre free trade agreements, they're struggling now. And this is new. This is new territory. This is, where do we go from here? And I often wonder if it would be better just to say, you know what, we're gonna take, you know, 3 or 4 months. We're not gonna pay the mortgage. We're just gonna let the house go, which a lot of people are doing. And you take that money and you go and you rent something.
I know friends today. They'd like to sell their home, move on. They're getting to an age where, you know, they want to downsize.
Can't.
The money isn't out there, and they're not willing to sell it at 50%. So they're basically waiting, and you know, their life's on hold.
Yep.
Just two other numbers, Rick, and then I'll give it back to you.
You got about 30 seconds.
Number of workers whose employers do not offer retirement now, for the Republicans who think that Social Security isn't relevant, 78 million, 49% of employers out there do not offer a retirement, which is astounding, 78%. Compensation levels, which has a direct effect on the middle class and workers not getting their fair share. 1973, the ratio between compensation levels of CEOs and workers, 27 to 1. 2007, the ratio went up to 275 to 1, and I know today it's even higher. You wonder why the middle class is being decimated.
Amazing stuff. Again, tomorrow noon to 2, every Saturday and Sunday noon to 2 right here. You can watch us on the Ustream, listen to us on the Horn. Or AM 960 WHYL here locally over terrestrial airwaves. I'm really looking forward to Tuesday because I think we're going to be able to do some great things together. And I look forward to your help. We will see you here Monday at 9 o'clock for our last exclusive Horn broadcast. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next week.
Of the game, the mock. Flying the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Yeah, well, I will get out the voodoo doll if she doesn't.
You might oughta. You might have to.
Have a nice weekend.
You take care. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And that is News Ninja Susan calling from Oregon. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Why didn't Media Matters buy the gold-plated microphone instead?
Yeah, because the EIB is probably much more expensive.
Yeah, I mean, but that's exactly what I'm talking about, you know. And I guess I'll name the other site, but... another site that I go to is just like that. They think just on those terms. Antiwar.com, even though it is funded partly by Pat Buchanan, and there's always a Jewish anti-Jewish slant to it that I hope people know when they read the headlines and stuff. That's one of the reasons why I don't jump into the whole the neoconservatives. They are to blame for 9/11 and all of that because it's already framed in the direction of being anti-Semite, the people that are driving the lines, especially people like Pat Buchanan and so forth. But yeah, they have on their site, they're always saying, we need $70,000 this quarter, we can do it. And I'm thinking, they don't really specifically tell what they need the $70,000 for, and that amount, and it seems to come quicker and quicker each quarter. And it's like, Jesus, how do you guys are just totally eating through money like that. And that's a problem on the progressive side with a lot of these organizations. I'm not saying anti-war is progressive or anything like that, but I mean, yeah, I'm seeing that more and more, Bob. And what I'm saying is take that money and build it for the parade and something like a Fighting Bob Festival. Pull your money together and stop going crazy over these commercials that nobody gives a shit about.
You know, I am a regular visitor to Bartkopf's site, bartkopf.com. And he had a comment on the latest page. I think it was yesterday. I didn't see it until today because of the obvious problems involving a certain sick computer here. But I was looking at it today, and I saw this one note that he made. It says, George Soros gives $100 million to human rights campaign.
Yeah.
And bless his heart, there has been no one sharper or snarkier or more on point for well over 10 years on the interweb tubes than Bartkopf. And he said, you know, hey, George, that's great. Next time, give Human Rights Campaign $99 million, and give ten bloggers a share of the last million. We actually get things done. And I sat there, you know, it's the truth.
It is the truth.
Because there's some stuff that just goes up in smoke. And you know, again, I feel really uncomfortable criticizing this move by Media Matters, and you know, here I am, just a little pissant guy with a microphone. But giving ever for any reason, giving News Corp liberals hard-earned dollars is kind of a slap in the face, isn't it?
But you know, this is the thing. They're thinking in terms of, I can already picture it in their offices. They're already thinking, Bob, in terms of, this is for the greater good, guys. I know it's News Corp. You know they're thinking that. This is for the greater good. I know this money, I know it seems like a lot, but we can get this fairly quickly, and then we'll go back on, and we'll go back to, providing for our viewership in a more, professional manner, or whatever. I think that's why I'm not so much scolding these organizations, but I think they do need to be told. If anyone's listening at Media Matters, you do need to be told that when the movements are in a crisis, when the progressive and the liberals are in a crisis like they are now, and you know, Bob, if you look around, I mean, I was just been listening to the ads on right-wing radio. Holy cow. I mean, if this is anything that is coming for what's coming for in the election, and all of this sticks, like I think it's going to stick, we're in for a world of pain and a world for hurt, and that's why we need that parade now.
The parade metaphor has caught on with you, hasn't it, David?
Yeah, I mean, Tom's saying it. I think a lot of people are saying it, and like I said, there needs to be like a something similar to the Fighting Bob Festival. Maybe Horn listeners can pool our heads together, and we can come up with something that it will be a timely event like this. But yeah, there needs to be an alternative to that. And the other thing that really struck me, really made me just like shake my head was. Have you heard the CNN reaction to the guy in Florida?
No, I'm almost afraid.
Well, they said they actually came out and they had an anchor person. They said, you know, I guess we could have handled this story differently, like a slap to the forehead right there. And then Anderson Cooper comes in and says, well, we had to cover it. And I was like, oh man, you had to cover a loon. And you know, Bob, that made me thinking. I was looking at the Take Back the Media site. Monday, I'm going to spend time calling up these networks and saying exactly what I feel that these networks are doing, which is incitement of riots. And this is ridiculous. I mean, these people need to be shut down now. Not 10 minutes from now, not 15 minutes, not a month from now, now. And these networks are, I mean, to me, these networks are so, these networks are so guilty. Especially, they keep on following with these stories, and then they just let, did you see they just let that Phelps guy back in now?
Let him back in where?
Well, you know, the story is that.
Yeah, they're gonna do, yeah, even if he doesn't, they're gonna.
Right, there's like four or five other churches.
Right, and one creepy old bastard in Tennessee.
Right. And you know the news networks are going to cover these guys. And it makes you look around and say, is this really the direction you want to go? You're willing to play with this many people's lives for, the quick ratings that you're going to get from this?
You know, I saw a little coverage of the coverage, David.
Yeah.
And I saw mention of the fact that the Associated Press had already told its reporters, Under no uncertain terms, if these things go down, were they to publish any photographs of it? How about don't cover it?
That's a start. And you know, they already have one casualty from the Afghanistan protest. I don't know if you heard about that.
No.
Yeah, so we already have one casualty to this crap. And you notice that probably the news networks aren't going to cover this. Because there are a lot of people in those newsrooms, Bob. I know they have a conscience, and I know they're ashamed. But somebody's going to need to speak out there pretty soon, because there's going to be a whole lot more that are going to be dead on the ground. And you can't go to Condoleezza Rice saying we had no way of knowing. Yes, you did. You knew these people are loons. You know they're part of the loon and nutty. Stop covering them. I mean, it is not that hard. You can find another story. For God's sakes, Floyd Mayweather and his girlfriend had a spout today.
Oh, my God, no.
Yeah, yes. And, I mean, that's what I'm talking about. I mean, there's the Britney Spears thing with his bodyguard. Just go back to that. I don't appreciate it. But in terms of what the alternative is, I don't like this route. This route is – did you hear about the Kraft shooting today?
No.
See, this is another thing that people don't – I mean, they're gonna ramp up this story, and if they don't ramp up this story, Bob, they're gonna ramp up another story. I mean, a Muslim woman who was working at the Kraft factory shot up a
like Kraft Foods.
Yeah, and I think she killed two people. Let me see. So she's accused of gunning down with a .357 Magnum just minutes after she'd been suspended. She's accused of killing two co-workers and critically injuring a third at the Kraft plant in northeast Philly. And one of the co-workers says he called the alleged shooter very spiritual. But you see, they're going to use stories like this the ramp up, the fact that she's a Muslim, the fact that she went a little haywire. Like I said, people, the culture war is here, and it's coming, and they're going to use this Muslim excuse. And you know, Bob, the other thing is that we need to understand is these people that are inciting riots. To me, one of the biggest culprits. I know a lot of people like talking about the politicians, but I ignore all those people because I look at those as all as distractions. One of the main culprits, and I'll say his name, is that guy Robert Spencer at Jihad Watch.
Ew.
He's putting out lies, Bob. I mean, he's putting out lie after lie after lie because they want to incite one of the biggest culture wars that they've ever seen so they can sell their Islamophobe porn nonstop. Remember, people, I said that when you have people like that and they're not held accountable, well, let's face it, accountable is a bumper sticker now, isn't it? We should all just get our accountable bumper stickers. Let's just all order them, because that's what it means now, Bob. It's just a bumper sticker. Let's hold them accountable. Where's that bumper sticker? All right, thanks. Here's a bumper sticker that says accountable. Now we held you accountable.
Okay, you're accountable. Move along.
And that's what I mean. But people like Robert Spencer, who are gearing up, I mean, I just looked at some of his stuff on his site, and I just saw how many books he had out, and the fact that New York Times even reviews his crap is suspect, to say the least. But I mean, he's a bona fide pathological liar. And yet, Bob, he's training everyone. He's training everyone in the right wing. I don't know if people know that, but yes, he's training pretty much everyone in the right wing about how to handle the Islamic issue. And he's doing a pretty damn diabolical job at it. Because every time you turn on the radio now and you hear all of these Islamic talking points, they come from Robert Spencer.
Son of a... And of course, underlying all of this, David, is the fact that they are very effective at getting goons like this guy's words out.
Right. But here, the other thing is that when you lie to this degree, when you lie about what the imam said, by the way, I thought that with that interview with the imam and Soledad Bryant, I don't watch CNN, I don't watch any of that, but the clips that I heard, I was very impressed with that guy, and I hope he keeps up that line. And I got to applaud someone like that. I don't know if you heard the interview with Soledad Bryant, but wow, Bob. And yet they're using those as talking points, is that this guy is a radical Muslim. See, it never ends, people. It never friggin' ends. And this is what I mean by the fact that they want to create an elaborate distractocracy that we've never seen before. And, Bob, it's just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. It's not going to stop, people. It's not going to stop. They want to keep going one distraction after the next. And here's the other thing, Bob. Did you notice that they're going faster and faster than ever before?
Yeah, like light speed.
This is why, since the Obama administration is not going to do anything about it, that's why I'm going to spend Monday morning just calling all the TV stations, because I don't want to see anybody. I don't want to see anybody get hurt, and I don't want to be the person that just like sits back and says, "Wow, they're burning mosques. Wow, they're burning churches. These stupid news networks." This right here. You know, Bob, if it was up to me and I lived in the city, I would organize people to put. And if there was an actual an incident that was that happened on American shores, I wouldn't feel guilty about saying I think we need to chain the doors of news networks and tell them no more incitement of riots, because that's where we're at, people. That's where we're really at. We're right at that cusp. We're right at that cusp, Bob. And these news networks, they're not going to back down, because they're going to look, they're going to say it's too big of a story. It's too big of a story. We can't. They're junkies, Bob.
They are. And again, you kind of take me back to the what's the point in spending that money and giving it to News Corp? You know what I mean?
They're laughing at us. And you know one last thing before I go, and I was thinking about this today, and I think this sums up how people look at politics. How the right wing looks at politics in general, and I took a bit of that from watching this movie 1% with Jamie Johnson, who probably is never going to make another documentary again because his family got to him. But Bob, that is one of the most powerful, riveting movies you will ever see, and you won't see it on TV, because the fact is that Jamie Johnson took Milton Friedman to task. He took his family to task. He took all the wealthy families to task because he couldn't understand this 1% theory and wealth management and going to wealth seminars and the investing for decades and decades on end just to be the family with the most money. And but one of the things that really caught me was the fact that I think that liberals and progressives really need to pay attention to this bit right here. But Republicans and politicians that are running now, Bob, they look at this as a hobby. And politics for us, that's increments of survival.
That's pretty dadgum profound, David. Increments of survival.
If you think about it, Bob, it's where we're at right now.
No, I think you're right.
I'm going to let people marinate on this weekend, and when you pay attention and you see how these Republicans are acting completely out of line and just completely crazy, just think about their families, and just think about that this is just like a fox hunt for them.
Somebody blow the horn. Jesus Christ. But it...
I mean, if you think about it, Bob, I mean, that's the other thing. That's the other thing that a lot of liberal writers and journalists don't understand. They don't care if they get the House. You know why they don't care if they get the House? They just care if they get some seats. They just care because they can run back to their supporters and say, hey, look what we did for you guys. You see what we did for you? Do you know what we're going to do for you in 2012? And if 2012 doesn't happen, you know, we were so close, guys. What about 2016? We can do it.
And what you're tapping into there, David, is the toxicity of the fact that, and I don't know that I've ever heard it described this way.
Yeah.
But what you're describing is the toxicity of a political system that is commercialized. You know, we talk about corporate money and dirty money and the sickening need for fundraising, but we never describe the fact that the American political system is just plain old-fashioned commercial. And all of this is the natural outgrowth of a capitalist political system. And I'm sure the Goombas or Gomers or whatever on the right would say, well, that's right, because Jesus loves capitalism. But really, is there anywhere in this country where you can sort of get out of the shitstorm?
Yeah.
And hide from the ruthless hand of the unseen, the ruthless unseen hand of the market? Is there anywhere? Cynically, I would suggest that if there is, they are damned few and far between.
I mean, and that's the thing about it, Bob, is that the right wing has such a diabolical stack deck for the working people and for people who are supporting Democrats that if my biggest concern is that Democrats don't understand that they really have to get progressive and quite liberal really, really quick. Because what I see happening right now, the buildup, what I was listening to on the radio with the books, the propaganda, the movies, oh, Bob, wait till we get to a prayer meeting Wednesday when I have to tell you about this. I mean, it's gonna blow you away because the fact is that, remember I said that the Christian culture war and the propaganda, they're building it in such nefarious ways you can't even imagine. I mean, they've got the money people and they got the money from the books and they're going to invest it in every single level of propaganda you can imagine, all of these bestsellers. And that's part of the problem is that the Democrats, they don't understand that the working class and the working people are on this thread, and meanwhile they've got Brooks Brothers suits.
Precisely. Or maybe just bespoke, you know, handmade.
But before I go, just to put this out, the ripple once again. What I thought about today was the fact is that Republicans and Republican family, dynasty families, and politicians and people who get into politics, they do this for a hobby, a sport, and for the Democrats and working class, it's for increments of survival.
Hang on to that one. Work with that one, David.
All right, Bob.
All right, you have a good weekend. Take care.
All right, later.
Bye now. Email coming in. I'll go right back to the phones in a second. Email coming in from our buddy Andy in California. He says, PG&E are bad actors. I drove by the PG&E disaster last night in San Bruno, saw the flames, and smelled the gas. You could smell the fumes and feel the heat from roughly 5 miles away. PG&E wants to eliminate public municipal utility competition in California, as you mentioned. And that wasn't so much me as it was Marty. The ballot initiative PG&E pushed would have required two-thirds supermajority to permit a municipal utility to raise funds to expand. Fortunately, it lost. Amazingly, this wasn't the first ballot initiative they funded with big money, and it won't be the last. Your listener mentioned $46 million. They do the same on local ballots around the state to stop the spread of public municipal utilities. A few years ago in Sacramento and environs, PG&E successfully flooded the airwaves and mailboxes with propaganda to stop SMUD, the Sacramento Municipal Utility District, from expanding in the Central Valley of California so they could exploit the locals with their service. PG&E won that one. PG&E wants monopolistic control of California and will stop at nothing to get it. Money is no object for propaganda. They are bad citizens, bad for the state, and bad actors. PG&E has plenty of money for propaganda, but still can't seem to dig into their pockets to pay for maintenance and upgrades. When will the people wake up? SMUD and the other municipal utilities do a great job. We control them, the people, the commons, and prices stay reasonably low with lots of alternative energy initiatives. Thanks, Andy. Ron and Raleigh adding in some more numbers. PG&E's net income after dividends last quarter was $333 million, or 86 cents per share. And not a dime of that could go into making sure that 62-year-old high-pressure gas lines don't corrode, come apart, and blow the hell up. Ron and Raleigh also noting what nobody tells you is that the invisible hand of the market is all thumbs. It couldn't find its ass with both hands at high noon in a hall of mirrors. Sorry. Deadly serious, but hanging on to that one. Let's get that again. The invisible hand is all thumbs. It couldn't find its ass with both hands at high noon in a hall of mirrors. Amen. And onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I do.
Oh, that's really good. I'm very nice to talk to you. It's been a long time since I've called in, I have to say. This is Alan calling from Miami.
Hey, Alan. I thought I recognized your voice.
Really? After all that time? Quite amazing. It's the first time I'm trying to call in via Skype, and it seems to work.
So far, so good.
So good. Yeah, that's great. Just tuned in and, you know, got caught up in all the stuff you're talking about on several different levels. First of all, I just wanted to mention that when I tuned in, you were talking about, of course, this crazy guy in Gainesville and so forth, and all that represents. But if I may preface that, there's an event somewhat tangentially related to what you were talking about coming up this weekend, start in Miami. Actually, it's the beginning of an 11 or 13 city tour here. I don't know if you've heard about the Move to Amend, which is an attempt to address the issue of corporate personhood in America and all the
Followed some of that. Yes.
Okay. Well, for what it's worth, if you know people are interested, it's movetoamend.org. I'm going to be one of the speakers at the Miami kickoff event in Florida, and there are going to be, I think, like a number of other sites around the state where they'll be having it all during the next 2 weeks. And it's about time we address this issue. Corporate personhood is just it's sort of the icing on that cake of all this other stuff you're talking about of the problems of the corporate domination of our society. And one of the effects leads directly or indirectly to a guy like you have this in Gainesville is the dumbing down of America.
Oh, hear, hear.
Pardon?
I said, oh, hear, hear.
Yeah, yeah, the dumbing down of America, and at the same time while dumbing it down, the glorification and the constant rebroadcasting of that dumbed down view of society. And so what I see, what my take, I mean, I'm not the main speaker, I don't know, at these events in Florida anyway, the main speaker is going to be David Cobb, who, I don't know if you know who David Cobb is.
Right off the top of my head, no.
Okay. David Cobb's a long time, been a lawyer for a long time, and he was connected to an organization called POCLAD, which has to do with the Program on Corporations, Law, and Democracy. He's been doing stuff with them for as far as I know, decades, and he was the 2004 Green Party candidate for president, partly because of the positions on corporations. And so this group that's getting together for the move to amend is about as ecumenical a political group as you're going to find within mostly progressive realms, because it includes groups like DFAM and the Progressive Democrats and a group called the Alliance for Democracy, After Downing Street, Velvet Revolution Backbone Campaign. A number of different groups are coming together to support this. And I was just on the website looking at some of the people who signed up for the pledge to try and work against the, work for something that will change the whole idea of corporate personhood. And there's an amazing cast of characters on that list, including such people as Rabbi Michael Lerner, Howard Zinn, Jeff Cohen. I mean, it's really, John Nichols is on there. I mean, lots of people on there, and it's just something worth, it's a movement at least worthwhile to look into. If it's not even a question of, you know, whether it's going to succeed or not as an amendment to the Constitution, at very least it'll bring up.
Well, is this the same amendment that Donna Edwards has put forward?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
This is this other group. I think the other one has to do with limits on spending specifically, which is fine. There's nothing wrong. The more, the merrier. But in this case, it has Bill McKibben, it has Bill Fletcher. All, you know, I'm just looking at some of the names.
Yeah, it sounds like a who's who.
Yeah, and I don't know if you know Bruce Gagnon.
That name does ring a bell.
The Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. He set that up years ago when he was living in Florida at the time where I'm from, or I'm living. And I got to know him back then when he was setting that thing up. He's up in Maine now or something. Anyway, but my contribution is I'm not going to be like the main speaker for this. There's going to be a number of speakers, including the mayor of South Miami is going to speak. It's going to be held at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation here in near South Miami, in Miami. And my take on it is one that's something that we have shared on a couple times or so before. Is sort of an anthropological view of it. What I see the damage done by corporatization and the corporatization of our society is that what we're talking about is a very deep level of destruction of the historic origins of culture itself. In other words, in a very short period of time, what the corporate domination and power, when it's come together and concentrated, has done, it has derailed the millennial-old record of growth of culture, the passing down of information and knowledge and customs from one generation to the next. We have a group of people who today think they are so much sophisticated and more advanced and civilized than our forebears who used to live in the caves and on the plains. because we have access to all of this technology and this information. Yet you shut
that can be a rapidly proven false assumption, can it not?
Yeah, you shut off the power for a month and you begin to see it's skin deep. But not only is it skin deep, we have less ability to survive. Because we are so dependent on stuff being fed to us and given to us. You ask most people, where does the food come from? It's from the supermarket.
Bingo.
We don't know.
Where's the electricity come from? Wall socket.
Yeah, that's right. And so what the corporations have done for us with human culture, it has taken away, when the family farm started to die, the previous two centuries, but largely in the 20s and 30s and stuff like that, we began the large-scale breakdown of understanding of how to grow food. Most people don't even know how to make food that they get from the supermarket. They buy a prepackaged all the flavors and all the junk and all the toxins and all the flavorings and petrochemicals that are in there. Wouldn't know how to put it together in a helpful way if they had to. But now that doesn't even lead to the fact that, you know, most people wouldn't know how to spend the time to cook or prepare or buy or shop. People don't know how to grow the stuff. And what the raping, the actual raping of the land by these mega corporations, ConAgra and so forth, what they have done here and abroad is just obscene. You know, this business about seeds that have patents, and they're forcing you to put in, it's Roundup Ready seeds.
The Frankenfish thing that I talked about a few nights ago just had me standing on my head.
It's unbelievable. And we don't notice this angle of it. There's the whole political side, which really desperately needs to be talked about. Unfortunately, we don't have allies in the Democratic Party. I'm sorry to say. I'm not saying no allies. I'm saying there are a few people there, but there's no will. But I don't get to the political side. The fact is that we don't realize how it's undermining human culture in the same way that it's undermining the rest of the planet. In other words, we have distanced ourselves from the ability to put together experienced and wise human beings in the same location, or even online, for what the hell, but in the same at the same place to be able to contact one another and talk about things in a rational way. So, what should we do which will help us all? We can't do that anymore.
Well, but okay, Alan, hold on a minute then, because you just said something that I think is very important. What can we do to help us all? If our growth has been stunted in any particular area, I would submit to you that it has been stunted in that sense of common good, that sense of the commons. We as liberals, as progressives, as whatever we care to call ourselves, decent human beings, we do have a sense of the value of the commons. The other side thinks that the commons are just the short form of communism.
Oh, ain't that well said, my friend. And that's what the whole battle against communism was to stamp out humanity wherever it reared its ugly head. Anything that smacked of that. I mean, as you know, the people who think the McCarthy era is over are mistaken. We are still living that. Our nation was deprived of, and I think we can calculate this, I'd say 2 to 2.5 generations of people who were brought up understanding that it's okay to question and criticize. In other words, we have people today who think that questioning or criticizing is unpatriotic. That, to me, is a legacy of the McCarthy era attempt to get rid of, as you say, the commons. They were so pissed off at FDR, and they had vowed, this group of people had vowed that they were going to turn back whatever FDR did, and boy, did they go to work at it. And we're looking at the results today. And the basic controlling of mainstream media was an essential ingredient for these folks.
If you go back to the Powell memo in 1972, you find that it is the Powell memo speaks in generalities. But
please enlighten me on this.
If you Google it, Alan, I think you will just sit there. It's not a very long piece. It was authored by Lewis Powell, who at the time was not yet on the Supreme Court, And he basically charted a course for a right-wing takeover of the country that was done principally by vast sums of money being poured by the corporatocracy into the takeover.
Well, it doesn't surprise me. I mean, this really sounds like the plan that I've envisioned. I didn't know it as a Powell memo or anything else, but it's basically what I see having happened and describe it in my own to myself that way. But it's good to know of actual sources about that.
Oh, the whole thing. They meant to do this.
Oh, there's no question about it. And the role of 9/11 and all of this, there's no question about that either. It's so much BS attached to 9/11. So much emotional energy and patriotic identity involved in that. But it's amazing how people get up there. As I was listening to you before, well, you know, why get upset with the Islam because of the, you know, because 9/11. Yeah. You know what? People get upset, but no one ever cared about finding out what really happened on 9/11. Can you imagine a crime of that magnitude? The largest security hole in the history of this nation, and there was never a problem.
It was never, regardless of what position one takes with the regard to the rest of it, the absolute fact of the matter is that it was never adequately investigated. Any investigation that has as its jumping off place the fact that you are going to allow the actors in it to describe those events without being so much as under oath, and that you're going to let two of the principals testify with one sitting on the lap of the other, automatically delegitimizes the entire process.
Well, here's how I take it sometimes. You know, it's somewhat of a defensive measure, which you unfortunately have to be in a society that is more used to enabling the enemy than it is for thinking for itself. You have to be careful about what you say. So I say, look, I don't really care who did 9/11. Let's put that aside for a moment. Whatever theory you believe, whoever did it, doesn't matter. I want to know who gave the orders, who signed the work orders, who put up the money, signed the contracts and the checks for the people who were hired and cleaned up the sites in New York, Pennsylvania, and Washington. Because what they did in a short period of time basically was destruction of evidence of crime scene. And so, if you want to find out what happened on 9/11, all you have to do is look into who paid the people to supposedly clean it up illegally. That's it. I just want to know who signed those papers, who hired the people, who told them.
Well, you know, you asked a moment ago who was giving orders, and I realize it's a separate topic or subset. I don't know if you've seen this interview that kind of Sleazy Rice gave recently.
No.
She said that she was on the phone with George Bush back when he was still down in Florida, down your way, and he'd been reading My Pet Goat Upside Down. Remember that? Upside Down. Yeah. Oh, my God. He got on the phone and said, all right, Crown of Asia, I'm coming back right now. The decider's going to be in the house. And in this article, she says she commanded him and told him he was not allowed to come back to Washington under any set of circumstances.
Those are her own words?
Yes.
Shouldn't there be an inquiry just about her using those words?
Well, yeah.
What? Oh, she's commanding who, may I ask? With what authority?
There you go.
Oh, amazing. So the thing is that I used to play around with trying to figure out this game about why they were playing with the non-investigation, why go to war instead of, you know, all this. And so in a playing who did what game, I decided, you know, I remember from my old days of Dragnet, you know, we used to watching that as a kid, that you talk about, you know, when you're looking for a perpetrator of a crime, you look who had the means and the motive, right?
Motive and opportunity.
Yeah, and so I invented something. It had nothing to do with anything. I would just saying, what about, okay, let me pick someone. How about Berlusconi in Italy? Now, here's a person who had just finished shooting demonstrators in Geneva, and he was like showing the world, this is how you deal with protesters and people who disagree with your government. You have to use an iron hand, a firm hand. And maybe, what if he thought, and he would have something to benefit by saying, you know what, United States, you're letting too many freedoms go by. Let me show you, let me create an opportunity to give you a chance to get an iron hand also. And, you know, let's say he got together and paid a bunch of people to do that. I mean, I'm just inventing this out of thin air, right? But I'm just saying, here's a person who had the motive and the opportunity if you want it. And just last week, he was getting together with Muammar Gaddafi, wasn't he? Who is now one of the biggest investors in Italy. So, I mean, that's a separate issue. But what I'm just saying is, they never made a short list of people who would have had an interest in doing this. They never even went down that road of motive and opportunity and checking off names on a list. They never made a list. They just went to war. They took us to war on our nickel at a time when our economy was falling apart and have us created a culture of never-ending funding for private military interests as we're reducing the effectiveness of the actual military, which is part of the commons, like it or not.
Well, if we can back up for a minute, Alan, you know, you said earlier, I don't know why we're concerned with whether they were Muslims who attacked on September 11th. I agree with you wholeheartedly in that inquiry, and I think we can sort of reduce the inquiry to its absurd nature by observing that no one, and I mean no one, asked what Tony Hayward's religion was when the BP disaster took place. We only ask about religion if they don't speak with an upper-class British twit accent, a southern accent, or happen to have darker-than-pink skin.
That pretty much sums it up. So racism is being used as a tool, along with fear, to maintain control. Now, here's something that's really a little bit off track, but it will come back to track. I was looking up something related to what I might want to talk about, the role of culture, corporations on culture, like I mentioned about the changing of our very biology by substituting what we eat for what they want us to eat, or permit us to eat. And it reminded me of the story of Michelle Obama, who wanted to put in an organic garden at the White House. You know, that little furor that came up after.
Oh, God, yes.
Got all upset and,
the high fructose corn syrup industry was in full conniption.
Yeah, right. But what that shows, it shows two different levels. On one level, how vulnerable they are. And we must never forget that. It shows how vulnerable they are, how scared they are that something could come along and grab headlines that they didn't create. They are so used to, and they are so addicted to the fact that what gets in the media, they created in their public relations department, that when something else comes out that doesn't further their interest, they have conniptions. They can't deal with it. They have to tell us all sorts of lies about why organic food is bad for you and blah, blah, blah. They invented all of this stuff, and they had the nerve. Can you imagine any time in the past somebody writing letters to the First Lady basically to say cease and desist?
Yeah, but that really did happen. I remember the press release. It wasn't the High Fructose Corn Syrup Association of America. It was the American, the American Chemical Fertilizer Association or something. We just want to remind the First Lady that chemical pesticides and chemical fertilizers are a bedrock staple of America's heartland breadbasket of food production, and we think her garden would benefit by it.
Yeah, something along those lines.
Oh, I remember. I remember. Because I was screaming.
Yeah. And you know, but it shows, on one hand, their vulnerability, on the other hand, their desperation to maintain an artificial control of what goes on in our minds, a control of facts, which is ironic because they insist that they don't believe in facts. This phony science that is trumped up every time. Yet there they are, able to do something like that, just in a very sort of kind way, reprimand the First Lady, and nobody made a big deal out of that. Now you have this nutcase in Gainesville comes along, And it's twisting the entire U.S. media, the President of the United States, the head of the military, twisting around his finger. And with that, oh, as you were saying earlier, with the complicity of the media, and, you know, I've come a long way all these years, you know, the business that, well, you know, he has a right to do what he wants to do, and he has, like hell he does. That's where I draw the line. If we're so foolish to believe that if somebody wants to go and do something crazy like that, that's his right to do it. Then how, you know, in the meantime, we're not only arresting or not investigating you, we are killing people or renditioning them because one or two people in high places think that they might.
Oh, we've got a brand new Jim Dandy spanking shiny new Ninth Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals decision, yeah. Alan, that says the Obama administration is free to claim national security anytime that they want to cover up some dirty business. And right. if you'll pardon me for just a second, let me just throw something out there on that. The thing that drives me nuts about that decision is that, you know, we saw these things happening with the Obama administration 2 months, 4 months, 3 months, 6 months into the administration, and I was critical of it, and I'd get emails saying, you know, come on, Bob. He's only been in office 4 months. He's only been in office 2 months. He's only been in office 6 months. You know, this stuff's going to take a while to transition through. Well, we're almost 2 years in now.
Yeah,
and that Ninth Circuit decision comes along, and how do we explain that away now?
Yep, and the thing is, so if we just reinforced this idea that rendition is okay for national security, and then we turn around and say some guy who wants to burn Korans in a public place, that we just sort of, the president comes on and talks and says, it wouldn't be nice if you did that. Why the hell not use that against this guy and say, look, you can't do that. You can't do that. You have gone beyond your area of personal freedoms by risking the entire nation with nonsense, unprovable, not connected to fact, nothing else. They have elevated this nutcase. They have elevated the entire concept of nutcase, along with Sarah Palin and all these folks. In the past 2 years, we have elevated nutcase to theorists and directing stuff. I mean, how can we be amazed if Obama can't stare down Republicans in the Congress or corporations, healthcare corporations, pharmaceutical corporations, if he can't even stare down this Jones nutcase? My God, we have become pawns of idiots. We don't have the guts within the Congress or the executive to actually face up to the fact that, yes, indeed, I agree, America has enemies. But they're not people who necessarily fly planes into buildings. They're the people who have the strings on power, on money, are in front of television cameras and behind microphones. They are enemies of democracy almost every place you turn your head. And we're too dumb to know that we should be fighting those people instead of trying to cut deals with them. I'm sorry, I'm getting a little bit out of here.
No, you're not at all. You're giving my impulse to scream a little bit of a rest, Alan. It's,
take a break.
Well, no, it's a bumper sticker, you know? If you're not outraged, you're not paying attention.
Well, if you're not ready to resist, then get ready to give up and get on your knees.
And see, that's the difference. You have a working definition of resistance. Whereas we are dealing with some segment of the population, 20%, 30%, 40%, 50%, I don't know, that thinks that resistance is being pissed off because there's a half a Negro in the White House.
Yeah, I understand. Well, that's that other side. What pisses me off, what gets me more, I must admit, why I get more despair by looking at my so-called progressive and liberal friends, people who were on the same side, on the same line with me many times in the past or many things, that today will come along and say, well, you know, I guess that war in Afghanistan is the right kind of war. After all, we are going to be helping those women.
Something no, like see, my eyeballs blow right out of my skull when I hear one of those.
And the thing is, so many people are justifying, well, we have to give them more time, as you said. That to me, and you'll have to excuse me here, but you may have heard this before. Republicans and what they, not all of them, obviously, and we make exceptions for all the good people that exist in and out of the party. But their agenda is a full-fledged corporate agenda. They make no excuses for it. They go for it right at the juggler, as you explained with the that memo before. They go right for the juggler, and they go out. That you can resist. But the danger is that the corporatocracy uses the constituencies represented by both parties. They can use the Republican Party's constituency straight out and just say, let's go marching for this thing that we want, the corporate takeover, everything. The Democrats, in some ways, are worse. They are much worse for the society because we have the wolves, and they are the wolves in the sheep's clothing. Their official job is handed to them by the corporatocracy, not the good Democrats who want change. And everything. I'm talking about the ones who run the show. Their job, their role they've been given, is to take all the good people who could resist, who are appalled, who would like to hold hands and say, it stops here, it goes no further than this. Take all of those people and make sure that they shut up and don't do anything without the permission. That's what they did to Michael Moore in 2004. That's what they do all the time. Anytime there's an anti-war, that's how they stifled and stopped the impeachment movement. That's how they threw a bomb in health care, and instead of giving health care, they gave the best, they didn't give the best plan for America, but they gave the best plan that the insurance companies could still muster up after all these years, one that gave them for the first time legal backing for forcing people to buy insurance from these companies. Instead of teaching people that insurance companies kill as many people as 6 9/11s per year in America, 18,000 people die with insurance, but not coverage of that insurance. So we have 6 9/11s a year. Why do we have a war on terror? Why don't we have a war on insurance companies? Huh? Why don't we go bomb Hartford?
Oh, because it's a self-answering question, isn't it, Alan?
I know.
You know, there are share prices. Again, you know, there are share prices involved.
Right. Take that, Prudential. You're never going to do this again. And then announce, today we heard of the high figures who are running Prudential or this guy. And you know, there was no trial. There was no this, that. But we know that they were the ones who were in charge. And sure, there was some collateral damage. About 300 or 400 workers died along with them. But, you know, we were one step closer to having health care for America. How's that for a plan?
You know, no, that's okay. You know, conversations like this remind me that I'm not insane.
Oh, man, you are not. We need more. You've got to multiply. You are. The problem is, and that's another problem, because so many people have begun to question their sanity, that as we slide further and further to the right, what a joke we live in. Now, if you compare it to the rest of the world or the rest of the industrialized world or however you want to call it, to Europe or whatever, we have the two major parties which have really locked up most of politics in this country. We have a far-right party and a center-right party. We don't have a center party or a center-left.
Bingo, you know, my other bumper sticker, what left?
That's right. No pun intended.
Yeah, I know.
There's no left. What are you going to say, Kucinich represents the left? Look, people like Kucinich and Feingold, they are the exceptions that prove the rule. They are the ones who are used to hook people into this addiction.
Well, but beyond that, the fact of the matter is, if you took an Alan Grayson or a Dennis Kucinich and you moved them to Germany or France,
yeah,
they would be centrists.
Right, exactly. They'd be social democrats, maybe, of the center.
Yeah. And you know, as an anthropologist, Alan, you tell me, and because I have a suspicion, what happens when any given civilization gets to the point where it is simply constipated by its own political process?
I don't know if there's one single answer to that, but it's a question I've thrown at students before. Is, you know, when a society becomes dysfunctional and incapable of passing on the simple, necessary, prerequisite knowledge of survival from one generation to the next, it is not capable of sustaining life.
Well, I mean, I think, please indulge my geekiness. You know, I think about how the Mesopotamian early civilizations were the first ones to develop irrigation, and then found themselves a couple of hundred years later, maybe 500 years later, with, you know, terrible erosion and salinization problems, and what looked like a really good idea began to go down the toilet. And their leadership structure was, you know, autocratic.
Yep.
And even that couldn't account for the problems they had. So you have these series of invading cultures that how many different cultures were ruled Babylon for, you know, 2,000 years? You move over to the ancient Greeks, and their democracy was. And again, I guess I'm digressing again. But you mentioned in our conversation a little bit ago, how democracy functions. And that's, along with what left, I guess I can add another to the list, and that's what democracy.
Oh, absolutely.
Because democracy in ancient Athens was developed only as a means of protecting some rich people against the predations of pissed off hungry hordes.
Yeah, the slaves and so forth. Sure.
Same thing happens in ancient Rome, and I guess I'm answering my own question to you, and that is when a culture becomes so hidebound that it can't get its own political business done, it collapses. It might take 25 years, 50 years. I mean, Jesus, you look at the Roman Republic. There was trouble there starting in 143 B.C., and it took all the way to, 23 B.C., for everybody to just sort of hang it up and realize that the Republic was dead.
The problem is that never before were the powers that were creating these kinds of problems and obscuring the social answers to problems, never before were they able to work at the planetary level of destruction.
Precisely. And they never had the ability to control all communications in such a way as to stifle anything but their own toxic message.
Let's face it, their goal is to have us not know how to grow food, so they have to supply our food, and they want to control the entire water supply, because we can go without food for a month or so, but water we can only go a couple of days. They can shut down any place on the planet by controlling water. And you damn well know that's got to be a corporate/military goal of the controlling of the entire planet. Any particular population, shut it down. Make people do what you want. It's might makes right at a new level. And that's what we're looking at. And so the issue of corporate personhood, which has just been given, that the Supreme Court ruling of Citizens United has made things so much worse, but people who look at that and say, oh my goodness, look how bad it was. Well, let's not forget that it was the Supreme Court who gave the phony victory to George Bush in the first place, who added more people to the court. You know, while people are running around worried about Alito and other Roberts because they're scared on abortion, nobody was talking, well, not very many, I was one, and I know other people, too few people were talking about, we must stop these people because they represent fascism in America. And it's no surprise that the lid was taken off of corporate spending. That was visible.
Right, just the same as it was no surprise that the punitive damage award against ExxonMobil for the Valdez, that was done away with. But you see, that's one of the differences. And again, it goes.
We don't have a body of resistance.
Yeah, it goes. Well, it goes back to the media's control, the for-profit media's control of the message. And that is, on their side, they can call us socialists. They can call us fascists. They can call us communists. They can compare us with Pol Pot, Stalin, Hitler, name them. But if we do it, if we dare to say the word fascism, and bear in mind that our side actually knows what it means, well, then, we're crazy liberals.
Well, but the thing is, I would have to say our side does not include the Democratic Party as an institution. Our side includes some Democrats. But the Democratic Party has never, especially since McCarthy era, taught anybody what fascism is or gave us any warning signs as the signs were appearing of incipient fascism.
And I would argue to you, Alan, that that's because that's not a sin of omission as it is a sin of over assumption. Just as the framers assumed that there were some things they really just didn't have to say in the Constitution, so too the Democrats and the World War II generation, frankly, thought, you know, we're really not going to have to explain fascism. This is going to live forever. But that's the curse of generational wisdom. You know, you mentioned 9/11. And we're going to, I'm sure there will be all kinds of, and I mean no disrespect, hoopla around it tomorrow. But it is it's a non-remembered fact that once upon a time, the Alamo was remembered as a national holiday. All over this country, people came out and had parades in the streets on the day that the Alamo fell. Well, that doesn't happen anymore. But that was done because, well, we have to remember this. And there was, a generational assumption that it was worth remembering and it was a must remember. And you can find examples of that in all kinds of cultures. And what we have going on here is a failure, a well-intentioned failure, I would say, on the part of the Democratic side of the political process.
I think you're being too kind. I think that's probably true for a very large sector of them. But the warning signs of this have been coming around for a long time. When Newt Gingrich came around and did what he did during the Clinton era, there were plenty of opportunities to say things, to point out things. With the health care issue, it could have been pointed out. We could have educated the population. We have lost track of the idea of calling a population together. I don't know what you were talking about, something about parades, somebody talking about parades, but I had always imagined, for example, if the Clintons had wanted to actually pass the health care bill they talked about during the campaign, all they would have to do is say, you know what, all of you who are interested in having a health care plan for all of America, we want you to either come or send your representatives to a march we're going to have in Washington on such and such a day, and the insurance companies would have to stick their heads up their butts because they couldn't fight against that. But there is no will, there is no money, there's no way the party as an institution could take a stand that would go against the corporations in such a way that would actually turn to the people to support a measure. Because they always turn to their funders, the people who paid for the election campaign, and say, what do we do next? So I don't know. There were so many warning signs. Dennis Kucinich stood up and for 5 hours in front of the Congress read charge after charge against Cheney. 5 hours, never before in history. This reminded me sort of like one of those Capra films, you know?
Yeah, it was Mr. Smith stuff. It really was.
Yeah, right. All right, he did that. What coverage was there? I was looking in the papers. They were talking about Barry Bonds and this and that. And there was no... He could have been talking about... I don't know. He could have been talking about icebergs for 5 hours. It should have made the news. But no, he was... charge after serious charge against the vice president, sitting vice president of the United States. And we couldn't get that.
And it was studiously unreported and studiously uninvestigated.
Okay, now the question then comes, okay, so we'll blame the media. Where was the Democratic Party to say, what the hell do you guys in the media think you're doing by ignoring it? Nowhere.
Well, and first of all, the Democratic Party was not real happy with the fact that Dennis did that.
Right, well, that's the problem. That's part of the problem. Not only were they didn't care about the fact that it was ignored, too. In fact, they were happy that nobody knew about it. Therefore, they were complicit in the silence. There's no way of...
Well, the way I look at it, everybody that didn't sign off on what Dennis did was complicit.
Well, yeah. So, therefore, I can still contend that we are closer to fascism than we were 2 years ago. Because nothing has really been rolled back. Oh, a couple of things here or there. But nothing structurally different has been rolled back. The power of the executive remains the same. It has gotten worse. We are now using robot bombers to dump bombs on a country we're not at war with. That wasn't happening, as far as we know, 2 years ago. So we're closer to fascism. And it said nobody has warned us, given us the warning signs. They're all over the place. You know them. Your listeners know them. I know them. They're there. They're everywhere. I happen to have a certain sensitivity to this because in my lifetime I've lived in two countries that were under military dictatorships. I know what it looks, tastes, smells like, feels like. And I saw this stuff coming decades ago. I'm not trying to say I'm prescient or anything like that. But, you know, I've looked at warning signs for a long time. I'm saying, where in the society are these warning signs being repeated or echoed or teaching it to a new generation of people? Watch out for this, watch out for that. Which is the reason why I got early on involved, for better or for worse, with the Green Party, because at least we were saying those things and aware of those things. We don't have the political sophistication, wherewithal, and money to really do what would be necessary to do about it. But the fact is that at least we're not being duped. We're not sending money and support and making phone calls for people who are enabling fascism, which I'm sorry to say is what the role of the Democratic Party is, to take the people who would protest and make sure they don't. I'm tired of that. I don't have any more patience.
And there, you know, there's a long history of that. If you look back and you think about what Huey Long was talking about during the Depression.
Indeed.
You know, Social Security, such as it was when it was initially passed, was done solely to take the starch out of Huey Long, because he was advocating some serious reform.
That's right. So
and then, of course, Huey had to get dead.
In fact. Yep.
Again, I think it's one of those generational things, but there's nothing new in this.
No.
This is the dirty politics that this country was founded on, from the moment that the Federalists...
In other countries where there's a strict censorship, the people at least have a certain healthy cynicism, and, you know, they poke each other in the ribs and go, wink, wink, you know, like that kind of thing. Oh, yeah, right, great, they told us this, and everybody goes, yeah, I believe.
Well, even the Soviets, you know, they had the Soviet workers had that line, as long as they pretend to pay us, we'll pretend to work.
Exactly. But here in this country, when you say, you know, that Obama's a socialist, people look at one another and go, oh, yeah? Wow. You know, we have no healthy cynicism. It's the destruction of our educational system along with the parallel concentration of the media, which has effectively put the most stringent censorship on this nation, I think, that the world has ever seen. And what the mark of its success is that few people know it exists.
You've created a scenario, or not created, but enunciated one, Alan.
Describe.
Yeah, that works too. Sometimes I get challenged in the midst of all of this for words. You know, me not talk good some days. But
no, too.
It almost seems, and I guess we come back to the theme we were working a little bit ago. It almost seems insoluble. Is it,
yes,
in your opinion, insoluble? If it's insoluble, all you do is sit back and pour a cocktail and watch the apocalypse.
Well, there's some of that, but the thing is, what really gets me is that instead of waking people up, instead of telling people about how many people die because the insurance companies run their health care, instead of telling people why it's absolutely necessary to save the Constitution and the Bill of Rights by impeaching those people who completely defiled those things, well, instead of teaching people what is necessary to maintain any semblance of democracy, we have instead told them to shut up and not talk about it, because it'll affect the outcome of the next election, which the outcome of which will not do anybody any good anyway. And so we've dumped people down. That's why there's no resistance. You can't have resistance until you know that there's something worth fighting again. I sometimes like to say it, the right wing understands that there's a civil war going on in America, because they created the damn thing. They have generals, blueprints, battle plans, soldiers, lieutenants, you name it. They got them all, and they consider the other folks, us, as the enemy. And the so-called liberal element of the center-right of America thinks that maybe they have a cold, something's not going right, the economy's not so good, it's been, we've had, like, bad winds coming from someplace. But not understanding that we are literally under organized attack. And until we get that, there is no response that will be appropriate to that. Because those people on the other side who are the minority are so paranoid that they think any sneeze is an attack on them. And they overreact because they have the money and the corporate organizing and the ability to overreact. And they can control it all through the media, which they have slowly but surely picked up over the years with the help of the Clintons and others who enabled them. We don't have a party of conscience, of criticism, of resistance that is in the mainstream. Now, I'm not trying to sell specifically the Green Party, but I'm saying if it were there, all the things coming out of my mouth, or most of them, or many of them, would be coming out. We need some sort of organization that points the way and says, if we want to get to point B, we have to be able to say what point B looks like. Don't expect to get to a place of equality and tolerance and wisdom and common spaces that are shared and respect for one another and trying to build a world that is good and healthy. You can't get there unless you say, that's where I want to go, and describe what it would look like and say, these are the things we must do as people because our representatives, our reprehensibles, are not representing us. They're representing the people who pay for the paid-for so-called electoral system.
Well, I take it then, and I don't know how much you've been able to listen to the program lately, Alan, I take it then that you don't take issue with my refusal to vote for my incumbent Democratic member of the House come November.
No.
I'm doing it because he's actively opposing my family's well-being because of his shameless support for mountaintop removal.
Mountaintop removal. That
in the Senate race in which my pro-mountaintop removal Democratic governor is running against a pro-mountaintop removal Republican for Byrd's empty seat, I'm voting Mountain Party.
That's it. That's why I supported Johnson in the past and things like that. I don't know. But there are people willing to do stuff. We unfortunately have bought into the idea, as Ralph Nader says, we have constantly, year after year, lowered our expectations of ourselves and of our society instead of raising those expectations. And so we begin to believe that we only have these two choices. How many people tell you, the lesser of two evils is this or that? If we don't do something different, don't expect anything different.
And the converse of that is that doing the same thing over and over again is the definite, and expecting a different result is the definition of insanity. Alan, I got to roll because you've got the lines all jacked up here, so I got a feeling folks are going to be responding, which is a very cool thing.
All right, you take care.
Don't be a stranger. I love these conversations.
Me too. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye now.
Bye.
That's Alan in South Florida, and we move onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Garrett.
Isn't left the turn that Bugs Bunny is supposed to make in Albuquerque?
I think you're right.
Yeah, I've been debating.
No. I took a wrong turn.
I think he specified. I've been debating it. Is it left? Is it right? Because I know he says a direction. I just can't think, ever since Alan said the left, what left, which is very true because that ties into why I wanted to call today. Because about Reed, guess what?
What?
All of the mainstream, power type Republicans in the state of Nevada, guess who they're starting to endorse?
Who's that?
Reed.
Hey, no.
Yes. Even the Review Journal, the friggin' rag that is so horrible, they endorsed Bush in 2004, a month before the first debate. Even they are starting to slime on Sharon Angle.
Well, there's really no way. I mean, if we assume for a moment that there are Republicans out there who have functioning brains, there's no way that a responsible Nevadan can look at, and by responsible I mean not a teabagger, not a birther, deather, tenther, fourteenther, booger eater. There's no way you can look at Sharon Angle and go, oh yeah, this is better.
Yeah, I mean, especially since this is, the power structure in Nevada is all insider backdoor deals, I'll rub your back if, you know, if you rub mine. And, you know, the fact is that Harry Reid plays ball, because one of the endorsements he's got, Republican endorsements he's gotten, is from the head of the Nevada Gaming Association.
Oh, sure.
Yes. So it's like, you know, that it says as much about Harry Reid being a dog lunch as it does about Sharon Angle being bat crap crazy. Even Wayne Newton went on Fox News relatively recently.
Is he still alive?
Yes, he's still alive. It looks creepy, though. He's had a few too many plastic surgeries or facelifts. Ugh.
Yeah, he raises his eyebrows and whines, stands on his toes?
Yeah, pretty much. But, yeah, I mean, even Wayne Newton, when made an appearance on Fox News, is like, I'm a Republican, but I'll vote for Harry Reid.
Cossack says, I knew I should have taken that left plane at Albuquerque, is the exact Bugs Bunny quote.
Oh, I knew I was. Thank you, Cossack, because I'm not at the computer. I'm being warden to my cat here. So he can be outside for his.
Oh, that explains the. Okay, I thought I heard a little trafficy desert noise.
Yeah, but yeah, it's just like, I mean, because. It's the perfect because there was a poll a few weeks back. I want to say it made an appearance on, like, Olbermann and Maddow, that a lot of Nevadans, including a overwhelming plurality of Nevada Republicans, wish that there was a different Republican candidate for Senate than Sharon Angle. The Nevada Republican number was like, I think, 71%.
Wow.
Yeah. Seriously, I think.
Dear Lord, let this creep pass from us. Wow.
Yeah, because I think the fact of the matter is that the people in, you know, people in states like this, they're not entirely stupid. I mean, yeah, they get distracted by BS, and yes, as David put it quite well, the media loves to kick it into overdrive, especially lately, but they realize enough to know when somebody is really crazy. And let's face it, the Tea Party folks have won a lot of Republican primaries, and they're a whole lot of crazy.
But they haven't won that many elections.
Yes. Because they talk about, you know, because when Scott Brown got elected, he's like, oh, this is the top side of the Tea Party. One, Scott Brown hasn't been that crap crazy. Two, we all know that Coakley ran a freaking horrible campaign. Absolutely horrible. I mean, calling Schilling a Yankee fan, that alone just downgraded her to about pond scum in the state of Massachusetts.
Well, but see, we won't go too far into it, but
yeah.
The Massachusetts thing was not a good benchmark, simply because the candidate was so awful. Yeah. Hey, Garrett, I hate to say it, but I got to roll along because I'm damned and determined to get to everybody.
Yeah, I know. And also, your buddy Rich, he's going to probably win against Notre Dame this weekend, just so you know.
One of the few times in any given year when I root for Notre Dame.
Yeah, because they drove me crazy last weekend. And then Kelly after the
game. That's okay. I'm getting quietly updated on WVU and Marshall, and this is not pretty. So
it's not pretty?
No.
What, is this a possibility that my alma mater might actually not stink against West Virginia?
You got a real chance of not stinking, them rebels.
Oh, yeah. God. Not like I'll get to see it on TV.
Yeah, 3:17 left in the half, 14-3 Marshall.
Jeez.
Yeah.
What did they re-recruit Randy Moss or something?
Nice, nice. Hey, Garrett, you have a good night.
You too, Bob.
Bye now.
Bye.
And onward we go. Let's see. Next try. Nope. Hey, welcome to the program.
It's Richard, Bob.
Hey, Richard, what's up?
Well, it's not easy for me to get to you on the within the hours that you're on the air, so I don't get through to you very often. So
I'm glad you did.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to mention something about Sandra. Actually, I was thinking about it might be nice to get together with her because a friend and I. My friend Gary was going to treat me to a trip to Sacramento to go to...
I've never heard of anyone being treated to a trip to Sacramento.
Well,
no, I'm being a jackass. I'm just... pay no attention.
Yeah, I live in the Bay Area. I'm sort of diagonally across from San Francisco.
Oh, wait. It was Fresno. That parody nighttime soap opera was Fresno.
What was that about?
Oh, it was a parody of, you know, Dynasty and all of that other stuff. But there was some joke along the way that Fresno was an old Indian word. Smells like Fresno, you know.
Well, I don't know anything. The only thing I can tell you about Fresno is it's in the big Central Valley word.
Well, what we're telling everybody about is my fundamental ignorance of California geography. That's what we're telling people about.
Well,
but you can't blame me having never been there. I'm only learning vicariously through you guys.
Look, come on out and visit.
Well, I'll throw an extra pair of underwear and a bandana and put a stick over my shoulder and put my thumb out on the road. I'm on my way, Richard.
You've already been most of the way here, you know. Your trip to Vegas.
That's true, and that was so traumatic I had to come back and regroup.
I don't know how you survived that. But anyway, there's rail service between here and Sacramento, between where I live and Sacramento. There's a lot of trains, as a matter of fact. California voted to...
be civilized?
Huh?
California voted to be civilized and have trains?
Yeah. California voted to encumber itself to put on regional rail service a few years ago. And we even have special rail cars that were built for that purpose, and they're very impressive. The cars are. They have excellent handicap access bathrooms, restrooms, and they went overboard to try to accommodate wheelchairs, which is quite a trick to pull off because you've got 10 feet of width to work with. On a railroad train.
Yeah.
So you got to make sure that the seats are wide enough for real people, and also can pass wheelchairs down the aisle. So it took a lot of work, and I'm real impressed by the cars. So we have dedicated train service between San Jose and Sacramento, and a little bit further east. Has at least 8 trains a day, I believe, and then we have trains that run up the Central Valley to Bakersfield. And the Central Valley, for them that don't know, is where all the produce comes from. And it's a
oh yes,
long hot place, and Sacramento's in it. So my friend and I were going to go to the Railroad Museum in Sacramento, and it turned and I thought it might be really cool to visit with Sandra. But that has to be okay with Sandra. And I don't know how to get together with it. So I just thought I'd throw that out there. We actually got as far as the trolley car museum, and which is about a third of the way.
Oh, that's got to be cool.
Oh, it was. And you know what? So, I'm into trains, so I don't consider myself a rail fan. But we went for a trolley ride. The museum has a few miles of tracks on both sides of the property, and so we took a trip on an old interurban car, and that was a technology which used used essentially big trolley cars to go from one city to another, and there was quite a network of them in the Midwest. This one was from California. But the thing that was so impressive about it was that they were hauling about maybe 30 people with two 35-horsepower electric motors. So the efficiency is really impressive. And that's, you know, one of the reasons why I would love to see people back on the rails.
Yeah, but at this point in time, California's soft underbelly was rather exposed last night, wasn't it? We're going to be hard pressed to do trains before we stop the state from blowing up from 62-year-old gas lines.
Well, my neighbor decided to build a patio a couple of years ago, and he put his shovel right through his gas pipe. Now his gas pipe's made out of plastic, and that's how it is, you know. It's kind of mind-boggling, but I don't, you know, as far as accidents like that are going to happen. I don't know.
Well, see, I don't necessarily line up with accidents like that are going to happen. When a company like PG&E uses all of its money for share dividends instead of plowing it back into the infrastructure. And 200 pound per square inch high pressure gas lines are 62 years old. Well, I mean, I guess it is fair to say things like that are going to happen. But the point, Richard, is that things like that oughtn't happen.
That's true. See, I think we have a different sensibility about it here because of earthquakes. You know, I mean, we have disasters.
Yeah, but shouldn't that make for a heightened sensibility about things like gas lines?
I think so, but it's a strange thing. You know, I grew up on the New York subway. I think, for the first, 22 years of my life, I'd say I spent a 12th of my life on the subway because I lived about 4 miles from Coney Island and, you know, was in Manhattan all the time, and that took an hour each way. And so I got interested in the technology of this thing that I was riding on. And the New York transit system had a lot of safety features. When I came here, I was shocked by the lack of safety on the San Francisco streetcar system, which includes a tunnel. And it included a tunnel at that time. And it's just like there was a lack of escape tracks. You know, storage tracks, places for trains to get out of the way. And that was just, you know, like normal. We have highways that have no alternatives here.
Well, and there's a similarity here. We built, there's a stretch of I-64, Richard, that runs from Beckley to Virginia and I-81. And there's a place called Sandstone Mountain. And as interstate highways go, it's pretty much straight up and down. And they built and engineered this thing without ever thinking, you know what? I'll bet you some semi-tractor trailers' brakes are going to fail on this. And they went flying off the highway. And they had to build, you know, those sand pit escape ramps.
Yeah, that's an interesting feature. What would you have done yourself?
Well, I think when you're building on steep hills, you assume that you might need some runaway truck ramps.
Yeah, right. And really,
and you engineer them in. If you go back far enough on that 62-year-old pipe, I'll bet you there's a sticker on it that says, replace me in 50 years.
Yeah, I said that a bit too glibly. You know, accidents are going to happen.
No, I'm not gooning on you.
PG&E has a really bad record on this kind of thing. You're absolutely right. I mean, you know, something came up a few years ago where the state was paying PG&E to trim trees to keep them back from power lines, and they weren't doing it.
But the taxpayers were paying. Oh Jesus!
Yeah. No.
See, we can't go too far into that, or I'm going to have an aneurysm.
Well, they lawyered up, by God, you know, and took over a town filled it with lawyers. Because a local, I guess it's a, would it be a DA, hauled him into court. There were fires.
Yeah, every now and then you'll find one of these little prosecuting attorneys who desperately doesn't want to get reelected, and he'll do stuff like that.
Yeah, this was a young lady, and it was a rural, you know, rural place, and they took on PG&E, who sent a whole army of lawyers in. I don't remember how it came out. I think, you know, they got a slap on the wrist, and you have to pay all this stuff. But the company is like, oh, well, hell, Aaron Brockovich?
Sure.
Yeah. That was PG&E. That's a corporate way, you know. Well, you know it from, God, the coal company. Jesus. So, I don't know how did we get on that subject?
Yeah, I don't know, but I do have I do have to run, Richard, because I've got them stacked up, and when this happens, and especially on a Friday, I like to try to get everybody who's online because.
Yeah, great. I just came in about half an hour ago. How's Agnes doing?
Oh, she's well. She's doing too much. Every now and then, I like sort of gently tackle her and make her go to bed and rest a little bit. But you know, there's only so much of that I can do before she calls, like, you know, the sheriff to come and get me. She basically does too much until her body tells her to go thee therefore and lie the hell down, and then she does.
Right.
But appears to be doing okay, and thank you very much for asking.
Okay, good. Get to the blinkers. I'll see you later.
All right, take care, Richard. Have a wonderful weekend.
You too.
Bye now. And onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
Hey, yeah, so let me ask you one little question. Why is Obama responding to that freak in Florida?
See, the only response in my book, the only response is to just to call the FBI and say, go pick the fuck up.
I know, but the thing is like, I'm just sort of, I don't really understand his, you know, the choice of doing that. It you know, along with all the rest of them, now it's starting to look really bizarre.
Well, that's only because it is.
Okay, because I'm thinking, you know, am I, like, out of it a bit? Because I'm really sort of, it just seems really over the top at this point. And it's making us, our country, look
stupid.
Really beyond ridiculous. I'm telling you, it's just disturbing.
Well, I was watching the chat room a little bit ago, and Zatoichi in the chat room said, you know, the riots are getting really ugly in Afghanistan.
Well, yeah, but are there some copycats now too?
Oh yeah, yeah, it's spread sort of like kudzu or some sort of disease. First, there was the crazy guy who doesn't have a church anymore, who was going to privately burn a Quran in Tennessee and videotape it and put it on YouTube, just like I said that the crazy bastards would when I was on the air Wednesday night. And then there's the fine folks at the Westboro Baptist Church. Shirley Phelps Roper, apparently Fred is too crazy to be let out in public anymore. He's gone Reagan on. Shirley Phelps Roper said, well, by God, I don't know what the guy in Florida is going to do, but we've burned him before and we're going to burn him again. And she basically accused him of being the copycat because she said they burned him to commemorate 9/11 a couple of years ago, and nobody paid attention.
Well, you know, I'm wondering if this is, you know, sort of a byproduct of, well, bear with me, a byproduct of, like, the lack of accountability at every single level now. You know what I mean? There's no accountability for the various crimes that the government officials have committed. You now have courts saying it's okay for us to rendition. And on top of that, you know, you have domestic squabbles that are, they don't resemble anything. Like, I've never seen anything like this. And I'm just wondering if it's a breakdown of rule of law, seriously.
No, I think it's, it's not an outright disagreement, Sandra. I think that it has become so difficult to accomplish anything for this administration, you know, for a variety of reasons. Obama did his presser today, and somebody asked him about getting Elizabeth Warren into the new consumer protection, the financial protection unit, and they asked, are you worried about getting her through the Senate? And Obama said, I'm worried about getting anybody I nominate through the Senate. And there was kind of a ha-ha, titter-titter, and he goes, no, I'm not kidding. I'm worried about every day because I can't. We have committee hearings, and then the Republicans insist on a filibuster-proof majority, and then when we finally do get the vote, and we beat the cloture, and we finally get the vote, it's 98-2. So just to finish the thought, what I think is that there's probably a speculation. There's probably a lot of frustration inside the administration, and they're at a point where they're at the do something, okay. And that's a terrible place to be in.
No, but I'm sorry to keep going back to this, but I think how they say the head of the fish rots first. I think that the lack of decisiveness and take charge or do anything about what went on before is a problem that's playing out now. I'm sorry, when I sent you that thing about Obama talking about, oh, he don't support the extension of these tax cuts, but he wouldn't promise that he would veto it. Well, fool, that is the only choice you have in this particular issue. Yet, it still wasn't clear. You see what I'm saying?
Well, wouldn't the veto promise sort of say to the Democrats in the House and the Senate, look, I've got your back?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. That is what he can do in his position. He could have said, no matter what, they send that to me, I'm vetoing it. He could have said that, but he didn't. And so I'm like, huh? You're against it, but you're not going to acknowledge the power that you have to actually put a stop to that? So that just leaves me just shaking my head thinking, well, what the hell does that mean? And there's hundreds of positions that are gone, even unappointed, let alone confirmed. The bureaucracy is full of, Republicans.
It's full of moles.
And there doesn't seem to be any housekeeping with the bureaucracy with which the executive branch is wholly in charge of, Bob. We're not talking about, it's just incredible to watch. I'm like, no. If you have a clue about how this government is supposed to work, all his talking don't make no sense. I'm sorry. I understand his frustration at the Senate, but, he could do a lot that he's not doing. So I don't, I'm not feeling that explanation.
Well, nor am I, and I don't know how much of the nation is, but I sat there and sort of, it's hard not to feel for the guy sometimes, because here he is talking about and he was trying really hard today, but of course he got all wonky, but he was trying to talk about the fact that we're talking about $50 billion worth of infrastructure. And I don't recall in the time that I watched him mentioning the big blow up in California, in San Bruno. And then he says, look, we're talking about giving $100,000 to everybody who makes, to every millionaire in the country, and that adds up to $700 billion over 10 years. And that should be enough to convince people. And there's an argument that it is because, there's a majority of Americans who don't want to see those Bush tax cuts extended for the rich.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's why what he just said is like, why don't you just say you're going to veto it? We're past what Americans want. We know what the majority.
Yeah, maybe be a little cute about it and say, well, I would like to remind people that I do have a veto pen.
Well, I don't really know, but the whole idea that he's arguing with himself about these tax cuts and on and on and on. It's just really bugging me because like we said before, it doesn't help with the confidence level.
And see, the way the question was put to him today was kind of disgusting too, Sandra, because once again, it was some member of the Johnny on the spot, the Washington press corps, fresh off a three martini lunch probably,
who said, well, Mr. President, isn't there some hope of some sort of compromise with Republicans where maybe we could just extend the Bush tax cuts for two more years? And, of course, I'm watching the television, tearing at my hair, sitting in sackcloth and ashes and all of that stuff, and I'm screaming at the screen going, because, again, he started into this sort of wonky answer. And the answer is, if we extend them for two more years, in two more years we're going to have this fight again because the Republican Party is not going to change.
No, I don't even understand. You know, the whole idea that they've gotten into the sort of media meme, a continuation of this for 2 years. See, I get back to the question of Congress will have to do something in order to make that happen, right? Because reconciliation means that things will only last for 10 years. That's the trade-off you get when you push things through that way. Well, 10 years are up. Now, if they want the tax cuts to be extended, they're going to have to be proactive. And if they are proactive, he has the veto.
Yeah.
Okay, well, what is the hedging about then?
That I...
And see...
I'm at a loss, Sandra. I can't give you anything approaching an intelligent answer because it's the truth.
Well, I'm not being rhetorical either.
No, I don't think you are.
Yeah, I'm just sort of like, this is just, well, you know, and
then, I mean, there's a million answers. One of them is, listen, there was a deal struck when this tax cut was passed that these tax cuts were going to be finite in nature, that they would sunset, and we're going to stay with, I think we should stay with the intent of the Congress. Because that goes back to what I said a couple of minutes ago. Did anybody, when John McCain was saying, remember when John McCain was still his own creature and he was saying the tax cuts were a bad idea? Did anybody think that in this sunset clause that the Republicans wouldn't be back screaming for their extension?
Well, not only that, but see, the problem also is that he wants a portion of it to continue and not the rest. You see what I'm saying? And I think that's where the stumbling block is, because in order for him to get some of them extended, he's going to have the Congress act. And so they may send him a bill saying that the other ones are extended, but so are the rich ones. And what are you going to do about it? You see what I mean? This is just the other scenario that plays in my mind.
Well, and one more for me is that all of this hedging and hemming and hawing is kind of a hallmark because there was one of those moments today where he said something, and it was like this, the most important thing about our economic situation is, and then it was like beat, beat, beat. And there was this it was like something out of Edgar Allan Poe. It was the telltale
Shut up. See,
and
watch it, so.
And maybe this is getting down into too much minutia, but it's almost, and I hate to even say this, it's almost like he knows he is not putting all his cards on the table. It's almost, Sandra, like he knows he is not being completely candid with the American people.
Well, you should, but the thing is, though, you still have the people who are, like, trying to support him. There's sort of 12 different moves and Jedi, like Tom Hartman today. I have to say, I'm like, dude, you know, just coming up with the most outlandish possibilities for how Obama is behaving. I'm just, like, so over it. It's like, no, this fool is just trying to save as many seeds as he can. There don't be no reason or rhyme to it. You know, I'm sick of people applying this kind of strategy, you know?
I do. And you know, I am supportive of him because I recognize the realities that the alternative in 2012 is terrifying. And by the way, if you want another one of those wake-up screaming moments, News Ninja Gene, who gets up every morning and reads the entire Internet, sent me something from... Watching America, and this comes from Die Welt in Germany. Here's a headline, Sandra. The Bush clan eyes the White House.
Oh, shoot, that must have... No, see, that just is... That's our mantra, ain't it?
Yeah. Voters have made their peace with George W. Bush, which is all the more reason for Brother Jeb to possibly run against Obama.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's, I don't know. I would normally think that, yeah, that's a joke. No way. But I have no idea what's going on with Obama, mainly because he doesn't seem to be willing to attack the big problems that are just staring, like the housing thing. I don't know if you read Scheer's article.
No.
No, I mean, and it's just not just him, but it's just in general, like I've been talking about, the sort of overhang of the empty housing. And every time the banks put a few back on the market, the values just keep dropping. I mean, there's no bottom. So there's no spending if people can't have equity in their homes in this country. And none of this tax cuts or...
Right, and no there's not going to be any home equity unless people have jobs to pour equity into their homes.
Right, so demand, he doesn't seem to want to deal with any of the demand side of this equation, which I, for the life of me, cannot figure out what the hell is up. Haven't we done this supply side shit for the last half a century?
Yes. Yes. Oh.
You know, with beginning with Kennedy and his fucking supply side tax cuts, and from there it just continues? Anyway, I don't know. I'm just so worried now. You know, I'm worried now, really. I'm starting, you know, I know I talk a lot of bullshit, but I am starting to get concerned that they will lose the house. Good Lord.
I'm worried about all of it.
You know, and I'm...
Yeah, if there's any consolation in that, it comes from the old political canard that truism. That there's only two ways to run an election, unopposed and scared to death. And I'm scared to death. And that's the thing that keeps bringing me back, Sandra, is that I recognize that as frustrating as this Congress has been, and as this president has at times been...
Oh, no, it can get worse.
It can get worse. I mean, there is audio out there as we speak from, which clown is it? Representative Lynn Westmoreland, Republican from Georgia.
Not, please tell me that she ain't related to that general.
No, I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
He.
Oh, Lynn, okay.
Yeah, the one of those names. He says that if they take control of the House, well, this is the quote. If government shuts down, we want you with us. We want you with us.
Are we talking about that again?
We got to have you because later on you will call us and say, look, I didn't get my check. Daddy can't go to the VA. You know, the national parks are closed. We need to be sure that you're with us because let me tell you this, all Americans need to understand. We need to understand this, and I hope you can help share this analogy with people. Just as when you talk about what is going to possibly happen, you know, I was unfortunate to cut myself with a chainsaw. What? I don't know how many of you have cut yourself with a chainsaw. Whew. Chainsaw is not the cleanest instrument if you're going to cut yourself. Dude was drinking. He said, this is going to sting a little bit, and it hurt like crazy. But you know what? If he didn't clean out that wound, it would have never healed. I would have got gangrene. I would have died from it. And what has happened with this country, we have put Band-Aids on things that need to be cleaned out. It's going to take some pain for us to do the things that we need to do to right the ship. He is talking about shutting down the VA. You're right, Sandra. Things can get worse.
Not only that, but it just reminds me of their whole show, their whole tired act is so disgusting. It reminds me of, I don't know if it was Mellon, one of them fools who worked for Hoover, you know, liquidate labor, liquidate everything. Liquidate, liquidate, liquidate. It was one of the Treasury secretaries in that period. You know, all about, yes, now's the time to just sort of bleed the system and clean it up. You know, that whole mentality.
Yeah, more drownings in more bathtubs.
Which means death. And now, we're talking when they want to purge a system, it never is purging of the capital markets, though. Have you noticed that? Which desperately needs to be liquidated. You know what I mean? It's never that. Now they're talking about the rest of the safety net. I mean, So that's, you know, I can only be flippant for so long, but at the end of the day, you know, I got to think, oh, no, this is not good. So, you know.
I know.
I guess I have to vote down the sheet, you know. Because I'm looking over here in California with these horrible women who are poised to take office, and it's just sort of like.
Oh, the Carly and Meg show?
Yeah, and it's just like that Meg. You know, she's a racist freak. You know what I'm saying? And it's just like, is this really going to happen? So, I don't, you know, I mean, I don't, I think we could wake up in November and just, the only thing we'll be looking forward to is that cat food commission. That'll be going on, too. So,
do you prefer Little Friskies or, no, I'm sorry.
No, I like the ones where you can open it up that's fresh.
Yeah.
But you have a little white cat on the cover?
Right, yeah, that's the stuff. Yeah, Sheba.
Sheba, yeah, that's for me. If I got to go out like that.
Jesus.
Anyway.
Tuna.
Oh, my God. Well, no, I got to say this before. Listen, that shit that they did on a football field was, like, right on. Their little, we're unified.
Yeah, them fingers in the air?
Yeah, the union action. You know, the media was just on a hate run. How dare they? You see what I'm saying? It was really awful.
Hey, look, the for-profit media doesn't give a damn what union it is. No, they hate them all.
That's the thing, but it was just kind of, it was hilarious. And I'm thinking, well, more power to you, you know. But they were not happy about that. How dare they for opening, blah, 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 and the fans.
Oh, I know. They were still hissing this morning on SportsCenter.
Well, that horrible Al Michaels, who's some sort of right-wing pig, you know, he had to snort out some comment.
I was waiting for him to call, you know, Drew Brees a communist or something.
Oh, no, but so I'm just thinking, you know, I couldn't have been more happier. I was really shocked.
Well, the thing is, if there's anybody out there, and I don't know if you know this or not, but not this part. I've been in the headquarters building of the AFL-CIO.
Hmm.
You do know that the NFLPA... The NFL Players Association is a member of the AFL-CIO, right?
Oh, okay.
Gene Upshaw was a member of the board of directors, and whoever the president is now is probably a member of the board of directors.
Yeah, it's some lawyer.
Right.
Know.
You know, the NFLPA could do more for organized labor in this country probably than any piece of legislation that could get passed. If they would get out there and get noisy and cough up some money and get in the media and talk about the value of union membership.
Well, the thing that's interesting is that all the sort of derision and put downs from the sort of sports media, I think, is misplaced. I think a lot more people can identify with union solidarity than they would like to have us believe. That's all. I was surprised.
But wait for it. I saw, you know, NFL players facing a looming lockout.
Yeah, lockout, though. This is what they need to hammer home, a lockout.
Wait till it happens and the meme changes, Sandra, to greedy NFL millionaires not happy with their millions.
No. You know what? I have to say no. On this one, no, I don't know. Anybody who wants to strike and hold their ground, I don't care if they're rich athletes or mots at this point. It's just the idea of some union exercising some strength in this country.
And the one place where scab labor ain't going to cut it for the United States of America is the NFL.
Right. And I just think, you know, these disgusting owners, I mean, they may not, you know, they may not have the public on their side like they're assuming. That's all I got to say. I could be wrong. I really could be, of course.
I hope you're right. I hope you're right, Sandra.
You know, I don't think that it's a closed option, since the owners are the ones who are desperate to make the players have less.
Look, union busting is in fashion, and don't think it's not in fashion in the NFL as well.
Exactly. I mean, you know, I don't know. I just, anyway, that was a bit of a surprise, a pleasant one at that. But if it takes these rich unions, I don't care.
Somebody stand up.
Exactly. Anyway, Bob, I'll let you go.
All right. Have a good evening, Sandra.
You too. Bye.
Bye now. See, that's one of the reasons we have to pay attention to the sporting metaphor in the U.S. Not that I'm preaching or anything, but it really, really is. Just before I go back to the phones, I read to you the quote from Lynn Westmoreland. It is not going to have half of its effect with it just being out there with me having read it. This you gotta hear. This is Rich.
He can tell you what happened. The government shut down.
Listen to him clapping about shutting down the government. Again, the background noises are important, just like the silent silences between the notes in music. Listen to the applause. This was, by the way, at the Faith and Freedom Coalition. Talk about a misnomer. Faith and Freedom Coalition. Faith in what? Faith in the fact that this government will be okay, if that veterans needing medical treatment will be okay if the godforsaken Republicans shut down the VA? Freedom to what? Freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose? Is that their faith and their freedom? Not that I'm being preachy. Pay attention to this. We're almost out of time. This man is talking about yearning for, turning off the lights and masturbating over a governmental political apocalypse. This is what the GOP wants. Every time you get pissed off at Obama, every time you get pissed off at the Democrats, remember, it can be worse. And with all due respect, there's too many people out there who are fragile as it is, who will be left laying in the dirt if we decide that burn, baby, burn is okay. That's the problem. But listen to these evil bastards.
Because let me tell you this, and I think this is what all Americans need to understand. We all need to understand this, and I hope that you'll kind of share this analogy with people as you talk about what's going to possibly happen. You know, I was unfortunate to cut myself with a chainsaw. I don't know how many of you have ever cut yourself with a chainsaw.
Oh, apparently the necks have all cut themselves with a chainsaw. Oh, I done. Did you hear that?
Chainsaw is not the cleanest instrument if you're going to cut yourself. You've got bar, oil, sawdust, other things in it. And so you go to the doctor, and the doctor tells you, I've got to clean this out, and it may sting a little bit.
Ain't that funny when you get cut with a chainsaw, the doctor says you're going to clean the wound out? You know, it's even funnier when they look at you and say, where's your insurance card? And you say, ain't got none. They say, go die, MF-er. That's real funny.
The doctor tells you something's going to sting a little bit. Grab the sheets as tight as you can and get your best grip. He said, this is going to sting a little bit.
So what he's telling us is that America, under the Republican Party, is going to hurt like crazy. And the thing is, they're sadists. So like I said, they'll be masturbating while we hurt. Okay? Let's get square on that.
But you know what? If he had to clean out that wound, it would never heal.
See, Barack Obama has now gone past being a Muslim. He is gangrene in America. He ain't black anymore. He's green. Jesus Christ. Are you scared? You know, I don't sit around wetting my pants worrying about some 6 foot 7 inch Arab with a portable dialysis machine living in the naturally air conditioned comfort of a cave in Pakistan. I'd wake up 3 o'clock in the morning with the sweat rolling down my head over these dirty bastards. These are the people, not a Muslim who wants to be able to worship as he sees fit under the First Amendment to the Constitution. He's not a threat to you. These sons of bitches are threats to you.
what has happened in this country, we have put band-aids on some things that need to be cleaned out.
Absolutely, and I gotta go because Rick Smith is on the way, but just you remember, you are what they want to clean out. Night, everybody. And remember, always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.